On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! You'll have to pardon me if I'm a little distracted this evening. I've got my Friends of Coal coloring book out, and I am having a devil of a good old time. Yeah, there's lots of coloring to be done in the Friends of Coal coloring book. Mostly, you really don't need more than a couple of different crayons there. A lot of black crayons, for coal, unless you want to be coloring the lignite, which is brown. Brown and black crayons, the sole use of brown and black crayons, and I may be mistaken, but I don't think I am. The horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner could probably tell me otherwise. But the single use of brown and black crayons is kind of one of those little red flags that goes up in psych cases of, whoop, we got a live one here. But really, you don't need much more than brown and black crayon to do the Friends of Coal coloring book. You can get yours if you want. It's over at, just look over a few stories down at thinkprogress.org. Oh, it's fun. It's got all kinds of coded word scrambles and explanations of where coal comes from and how good it is and how we all ought to worship it and have it on our make frisbees out of it and eat it on wheat checks. And, it's just good, that coal. With the little Fokker symbol down at the bottom of every page. Yeah, charming. You know what's disturbing about the Friends of Coal coloring book? It's part of an entire overall educational program to which little fourth grade children in West Virginia are actually subjected. It is sickening. It is truly some sickening propaganda. I mean, you remember the hissy fit that the right wing threw over the Obama education speech, a month or so ago? Because he was going to turn all our little children into, the little Maoists or socialists or the Nazi communists or whatever. Yeah. That kind of propaganda rains down on little elementary school children in West Virginia every year. Long about fourth grade. Coal is good. Coal is your savior. Worship the coal. Here's a coloring book. And a brown crayon, and a black crayon. Enjoy. But there's all kinds of subliminal stuff in this. One of the things that I found most interesting is that they represent a coal miner. You remember McGruff the crime dog? McGruff here! Right? Well, they've apparently bogarted McGruff. But now, there's a little girl in the coloring book who looks surprisingly like Cindy Lou Who from How the Grinch Stole Christmas. And there's a little moon-eyed boy. And then there's a dog. And the dog, here's the fun part, the dog wears massy stripes, and he's the representation of a coal miner. The Friends of Coal represent a coal miner as being a dog. Yeah, no kidding. So... Well, I mean, you can see how I would get all excited using my brown and black crayon to work on my Friends of Coal coloring book. I haven't had this much fun coloring since, I don't know if I ever have. But I got to pull myself away from it because this is, every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday are all my favorite nights of the week because those are the nights of the week that I get to be with you. But I just love Fridays because it's Friday on the front porch and we loosen up the straps a little bit and kick our feet back and put them up on the porch and noodle around on the banjo or have a nice cold something or another out of the zinc wash tub over there with the little silver caps just barely sticking up out of the ice. Oh, it's cold and good. Pass around the pitcher with the ice cold sweet tea in it. Just kick back and enjoy ourselves after a busy week of keeping up with the pernicious activities of the sick, sorry, sad, miscreant, misbegotten, misanthropic right wing. And on Fridays, we have a little fun. So if you can put down your Friends of Coal coloring book, I'll put mine down. And we will. We'll have a little fun. I want to start this evening with the audio to something. I was alerted to this earlier in the day. Have you seen John Stewart's take on Glenn Beck? Granted, we're doing radio here, so we're minus one element. And there are some visuals. But the audio alone, I tested this, by the way. I turned the computer, before I ever watched it, I turned the computer away and listened to it to see if it was still funny to sort of pre-screen it for you guys. And you know what? It is. It most assuredly is funny. I have never seen anyone so effectively or heard anyone so effectively take down Glenn Beck. Because, you know, Glenn's got a communist in his tummy right now, or maybe it's been removed in the form of appendicitis. Won't disclose the hospital he's in. Shh. It's a secret. But John Stewart took him down last night. I don't know what the standards are for awarding an Emmy. But if this isn't Emmy-worthy material for the writers, for John Stewart himself in the performance, they might as well just quit giving away the award. Because this is pure brilliance.
But I don't know if you saw Glenn Beck's show last night. It started with a bit of a shock.
Glenn is out tonight with appendicitis.
No. Calm down. I know you're concerned, but don't worry. He's fine. But there's a larger, more serious point to be made here. You may remember that 18 months ago, Glenn Beck was hospitalized after botched hemorrhoid surgery. So this appendix thing is not an isolated incident. Don't you see? Part of a bigger pattern. And the powers that be don't want us to talk about this. And you certainly won't hear about it in the mainstream media. There's a war going on. And the stakes are nothing less than Glenn Beck's internal organs. You see, I've been reading a lot of books lately, books on anatomy that aren't now taught in your so-called medical schools anymore. Apparently the medicine that was good enough for our founding fathers is now considered politically or medically incorrect. Rousseau's Discourse on the Science and the Arts, Linnaeus, Hippocrates, Galen's On Prognosis, and I've been playing this game.
That would be Operation.
Lifting Adam's apples and wishbones and such. I've learned a few things, and I know that what I'm about to say may sound crazy. But isn't it interesting? Don't you find it interesting that when we need Beck's post-inception analysis the most, doctor said today, sorry, Glenn, you can't go on the air. We got to take out your appendix. Isn't it time that we asked ourselves, as a nation, why that is? You're saying to yourselves out there, I know you're watching, you're saying, John, you're not a doctor. And he was in a medical emergency. And I say, right, I am not a doctor. I haven't been to medical school. I haven't studied for 7 years about internal medicine. I'm just a concerned American citizen like you. Questioning what's going on inside Glenn Beck. And it's time we got some answers. And if you don't get these answers, you ask again and again and again, because you know who else didn't answer medical questions? Hitler. Now, obviously, I'm not saying this is a plot by Hitler to steal Glenn Beck from all of us, internal organ by internal organ by internal organ, and then reprogram him to use as a weapon. But isn't it fascinating that I'm the only one with the courage to ask these questions? What is going on? Follow me. I want to show you something very quickly.
This is the tough part, the visuals with the chalkboard.
I want to show you something. Take a look. Take a look.
Van Jones, global warming, NAFTA.
What your appendix is connected to. I mean, it's all there. Your appendix is connected to your large intestine, which is connected to your small intestine, which is something that Karl Marx had. That doesn't seem suspicious. Because what is the small intestine connected to, people? Oh, I don't know. The stomach? Which is where acorns would go if you ate them. Acorns? Where have we heard that name before? And after the intestines suck the nutrients from the acorn, it would go into the colon, which goes to the rectum, which goes to the anus, which is the site of the hemorrhoids that nearly killed Glenn Beck. It's all connections. This man, this good, hard-working television personality, is under siege, not from without, from within. His own organs have turned against him, or should I say, have been turned against him. The naysayers will say, oh, John, organs don't have thoughts. They can't hatch a plan and get together and execute that plan. Oh, really? Really? They can't organize? They can't? Oh, you're right. I'm a cuckoo bird. I'm a big cuckoo bird. I eat my own tie. Well, guess what? It's happening. Right here. In the country we love. And if we don't stop it now, it can happen to you. You. The authorities one day will come to you and say, oh, we need to take out your appendix. It's infected, and if we leave it in there, it will kill you. Well, it's your appendix. It's not theirs. It's not the bureaucrats. It's not the liberal elites, the communists who want to socialize your Nazism. Or the Republicans. Don't want to make a political thing. Sorry, I just... I just love Glenn Beck's digestive and immune system so much. And I fear for it. Folks, we have to take back this country, and it starts with Glenn Beck's internal organs. We have to bring Glenn Beck's internal organs back to a time before the operations, before the pain, before the fever, before puberty, a simpler time. I've been working on something. I've been working on something since November 4th. That was the day that Glenn Beck was hospitalized. And I want to share it with you tonight. I want to take
the 11-3 project.
The 11-3 project. It's 11 principles and 3 herbs and spices. We designed it to remind we the people that our founding fathers believed their bodies were governed by humors. Is it me or when did we lose that? Let's get back to those days. Because if they can take Glenn Beck's burst appendix to save his life, who's to say they can't take your healthy appendix tomorrow and eat it in front of you and your children? We'll be right back.
Genius. Pure genius. I don't know when the news broke that considered. I mean, I just want to heap praise on Jon Stewart and that whole team over at The Daily Show, because the news broke about Glenn Beck's appendix, and this was together in time for last night's show. And Jon Stewart may be the quickest study in the last 50 years, perhaps ever. The audio is funny, but after the show, go over to MediaMatters.org and watch this thing. The hand gestures, the smarmy BS physicality, as phony from Jon Stewart as it is from Glenn Beck. You know, Comedy Central owns this thing. But the fact of the matter is, Jon Stewart just did the nation and the world a huge favor. I mean, if I had my way, and you know, I had a little hotline to Barack Obama, I'd pick it up and say, listen, Mr. President, call a press conference. Have the little the projector hickey set up. I know you've got one in the White House. And all you have to do is step up to the podium and say, y'all watch this. Hit it. And turn the lights out and let the Johnny on the spot Washington press corps watch this. And let the nation see this. I don't know how many millions of people saw this last night. I don't know how many people have seen it on the inner tubes today. But frankly, it should be seen far and wide, because this just peels Glenn Beck like a grape. I mean, it's funny. It's one of the funniest things Jon Stewart has ever done. But it also falls into the category of a civil service. This is a public service he has done. He hasn't just mocked Glenn Beck. He has shown Glenn Beck, for the Keith Olbermann's term, Lonesome Rhodes fool that he is. This thing played a few times until the nation saw it would be enough to destroy Glenn Beck. And by the way, just because, as you know, if you've listened to this program for very long at all, we freely acknowledge that if there is a God, the Muslims say that he has 99 names and there's a 100th name and only the camel knows it and he ain't talking. Well, there is one more name for God, and that is irony. God is a God of irony. Because as we speak, Glenn Beck is laying in a hospital, or has been laying in a hospital somewhere in New York City, where he has been tweeting about the quality of the care he is receiving from his doctors and nurses. And the city of New York, the nurses there, are organized. Because, among other things, New York City is civilized. The nurses in New York City are organized, and they are generally organized into one nurses local. That nurses local, in turn, and I'm trying to find the name of the local here real quick. That nurses local is New York's local 1199, the United Healthcare Workers East. They are a part of the Service Employees International Union. Like I said, God is a God of irony. That God that Glenn Beck professes to worship has delivered him into the hands of the people whom he has relentlessly vilified, the membership of the Service Employees International Union. And you know what proves the decency of the Service Employees International Union and the United Healthcare Workers East? The fact that he's going to leave that hospital alive. Because ever since I read that he is in the care of the SEIU, I'll admit, insofar as I do acknowledge that God is a God of irony, I'll admit that I've been sitting here silently chanting as if it were some sort of mantra, and I, staring at my navel, was sitting cross-legged on the floor, chanting, 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 air bubble, air bubble, air bubble, air bubble. Just one little air bubble. That's all. Just one. Unfortunately for us, but fortunately for Glenn Beck, the union nurses who are members of New York's Local 1199, the United Healthcare Workers East, because they are union healthcare workers, are competent in the extreme, because the union enhances their skills and increases their competence. And so there will be no air bubble for Glenn Beck. Yeah, what's the tweet? Never a good night's sleep in the hospital, but always easier with family prayers and amazing, in caps, amazing doctors, nurses. They didn't even cut off my feet. I don't know what the feet part is about. Is he referencing some sort of, is that some sort of weird little reference to Misery? You know, the movie, Kathy Bates, James Caan. I just love you. Or is it just the drugs talking? I don't know. But he acknowledges amazing care. But he won't take a moment to say, by the way, nurse, how is it you come to be so good at what you do? Because he or she would then look at him and say, well, Glenn, I'm a proud member of a union in this country, and the union makes me as much as I can be and more, because that's what unions do for working people in America, Glenn. It's a dirty little bastard. So I've just acknowledged what a bad, bad, bad human being I am. So let me just say this one more time. Air bubble! I don't know that I got it out of my system, air bubble, but we can hope for the sake of air bubble the rest of the program, air bubble, that I did air bubble. Please, air bubble. Nah. It's not that ironic. That wouldn't be irony. That would be just pure vindictiveness. And see, working people generally don't operate that way. Air bubble, please. Air bubble. No, they don't operate that way. I would, my insistent chanting of air bubble would have a lot better chance if Glenn was being cared for by non-union nurses. Then the air bubble would perhaps approach given status. But no, he'll come home and he'll heal. And it will be interesting to see if he shows back up and takes more cheap shots at the Service Employees International Union that helped save his stinking, miserable life. We shall see. We shall see. So I just thought, I thought it would be fun to, I thought it would be fun to start with a little bit of good humor. And God knows John Stewart provided it. And our buddy Marty is correct. If there was an air bubble, the rest of Fox News would be calling it a Muslim terrorist splinter cell, sleeper cell air bubble that infiltrated Glenn Beck's the circulatory system. And getting the Misery reference, Marty says, if anyone deserves an Annie Wilkes, it's Beck.
I just love you, Glenn.
Whack!
Huh.
Sorry, I'm a very, very bad person, and I freely acknowledge it. Let's, enough me babbling. Let's go to the phones and see what's happening. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Brother Bob.
Brother Luke, how are you?
No, that was just so much fun because he was perfectly channeling him. You got to watch it. You got to go watch it because at the end where he starts crying. Oh,
the crying, the gestures, the hand gestures, the reaching toward the camera thing, the look, rolling eyes and looking at the heavens thing. It was all there, and it was pitch perfect.
You just wonder how long he had to sit and look at tapes of him to get all the...
Well, see, that's my point, Luke. I mean, there wasn't a lot of turnaround time on this.
Well, you got to wonder, though, if he's been planning this, though, before, though. I mean, like doing the chalkboard thing, and this just kind of came up to use. Because you remember a while back, was it Think Progress had that chalkboard thing showing how Fox News was connected to everything. And I just wonder if he had been practicing for that and said, wait a minute, this will work even better. Something along those lines. But that had that, and then what else we had this week? Oh, well, I saw the news has decided to finally sell his soul now that he probably found out where he had it put away.
Oh, yeah?
Well, apparently now he's coming out. Now he's not quite joining the Palin group, but not exactly opposing them either. Because you tell he wants to be the candidate in 2012.
Well, sure, and isn't that what the Nootsie has always done, is try to play both ends against the middle?
Oh yeah, and stand behind both of them. And say I was for you all the time.
I was with you all the time.
It's like, Nootsie, did you ever work on any in gaming? Small thought. Well, I see the numbers are up again. That the Capitol Police said there were 4,000 of the anti healthcare people there yesterday, and then anyway.
Uh-oh, life interfering with Luke, I'm afraid.
Sorry about that. Had somebody come through here picking up some trash and stuff.
That's okay.
Handing comes through and says 20,000.
Right. Yeah, more of that miracle math made easy. It starts out 4,000. Hannity turns it into 20,000. It got up to 2 million at one point, didn't it?
Well, let's see. Stephen Moore of the Club for Growth had it up to 50,000. And from what I understand, I think it was Dick Armey's office had bumped it up to 2 million. And if you go over Think Progress, they got a picture of it. I wouldn't even say there's 4,000.
They couldn't cover the yard.
No. I mean, and that's just that front yard. I mean, but, you know, the other thing was, here they all were claiming, oh, this is organic. It's spontaneous. It wasn't planned. Oh, so those 20 rented buses just showed up out of the blue.
Just out of the blue, and all those donuts that were delivered and all those signs, because you got a sign and a donut.
Well, and the sound system and the dais or whatever they had there, you know, and all that had to be, it just all magically appeared. Each person brought a piece and put it together. My God, isn't it amazing? Now, they were talking about over there, said this fellow, David Koch's, what is it, AFP,
Yeah, I can't remember the name, but yeah, is he Koch, Cook, or Coke?
Well, it looks like Koch.
It's K-O-C-H. But then again, the guy who brews beer in Boston is K-O-C-H, too, and he's Cook.
I go with the old mayor of New York and go Koch, so, you know.
Yeah.
That's where I first heard the name, so until somebody tells me different, I'll go with that. Apparently, he rented 40 buses. Amazingly, he thought, you know, the people were going to show up, you know, because apparently, you know, nothing was planned. But he had 40 buses show up. They picked people up along the way. God, isn't that amazing? Oh.
Yeah, just playing This Land Is Your Land, going down the road and just picking up, stopping and picking up the boys under the bridge, bringing a couple of cases of Screw Top wine. You know how it goes.
Oh, and the best one I thought yesterday is Well, it turns out we're going to send John Boehner back to history class. Can you tell the difference between the Declaration and the Constitution, Mr. Boehner?
No, and what's-his-face also can't recite the, not John Boehner, but one of his other little comrades, if you will. For as much as they love it and want to have it tattooed on the back of every newborn American baby's neck, he can't quite remember the words to the Pledge of Allegiance.
Ah. Oh, dear. You know how that is. It's that time again.
He forgot the indivisible part.
But they'll always forget that. They'll always remember that under God part.
Yeah.
Don't you worry about that.
That wasn't even there to begin with.
Oh, no. That stuck in the 50s during the red baiting years.
Right.
But, it's just watching that, then watching, they had the thing over Media Matters where they had the thing before the election where Rush was telling people to copy down what he was saying that, after the election and Hoffman's elected, you have to, show your friends that you knew it was coming. Now all of a sudden it's like, well, we still won even though we lost. You know, it's like, up is down, bad is good, good is bad.
Calling Dr. Orwell.
Dr. Howard, Dr. Fine, Dr. Howard.
Emergency.
But you know what I mean? It's one of these things where, like we said, reality has no meaning to them. You say something, they just look at you like, huh? but the weird thing.
Just let's speculate for a moment here, Luke. What would happen if you took one of these the weirdo delusional teabaggers and you showed them that clip of John Stewart?
I think it's sacrilege.
I just don't think that's very funny, making fun of a man who's done had his rear end operated on and then has to have his appendix out.
Anytime somebody says that, then we get out the tape and we show them Rush making fun of Michael J. Fox.
That would work.
And you think that was funny. Oh, yeah, sure was.
Well, see, that's the thing. Rush is an entertainer.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, the cockroaches are just laughing their asses off. I remember this from years and years ago during the old years of the old Flush Rush Quarterly. And they came out and said that one of the things they found was some of the people that were counting big numbers that were listening to Rush had one of them was a guy running the service station that had the Rush on the radio. Anybody came through and picked up gas, he counted as a listener. They heard it. And I'm like, So, it's like that. I would say when Rush says 15 million people, he means 5 million plus 5 million plus 5 million.
Oh, but the other day, I just happened to hear him as I was driving home from somewhere, and he's got it back up to 20.
Okay. What they used to do is I think they used to do 17. What they said it was 5 million for each hour. And 2.5 is an hour that we don't, that unless you're local, you don't get. He has like a local thing, I think, before he goes national. Sort of his warm-up, I guess. But I remember them saying that before. Yeah, it's 15 million. And I've heard people break it down and say it's 5 million plus 5 million plus 5 million.
Well, it is. It really is. I mean, they're aggregating, clearly. And it's, and that's not even for those, that includes accidental listeners. Because the thing that has to be borne in mind is that this is all based on Arbitron ratings, which, I find it interesting that Rush wants to use those, you can't point to it's not like internet radio where you can say, this many hits, and this person listened for this long, and this person listened for that long. You can't do that. It's all based on statistical models via Arbitron, and it's all proprietary. And yet, if, say, the United States Census Bureau, Luke,
wants to use
mathematical statistical modeling, they scream that it's something right out of Mao's Little Red Book. It's a way to diminish the rights and real numbers of white people.
No, but like I say, I'm just curious. I'm not curious. Let's say I'm kind of interested. I guess it was just interesting last night to sit and watch. And I've seen things on the web today where they're talking about how some of the people, like I say, when all this was starting in Fort Hood, before they knew anything, you had the boys over at Fox Noise had already decided. They knew exactly what was happening. and were telling people it was a plot. You know, and I mean, you're just sitting there going, no, it's one guy who just snapped. I'm sorry, but he did.
Well, you know that sleazebag. You know, this may rise to like sleazebag of the decade. Nah, not quite. I mean, there's still
A lot of good competition for that.
Right, but certainly sleazebag of the day and sleazebag of the week and possibly sleazebag of the month, even though the month is young, has to go to Jerome Corsi.
Oh God, yes.
Because the news was barely. Everything wasn't even out there before Jerome Corsi was publishing a column over at World Nut Daily claiming that Nidal Malik Hassan was an advisor to the president on his transition team.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. I was like, God. Well, like I say, anytime I see the word Jerome Corsi, I usually phase out right then. Because it's like, say, I'm sorry, we're into la-la land now. Thank you.
Did you catch the headline for the column? Shooter advised Obama transition.
Yeah.
There's only one problem.
Had nothing to do with it.
It didn't happen at all, even a little bit.
Well, you know what the thing last, I guess it was last weekend, where they just went wild saying that, you know, when they had the thing where they had people, you know, they said that Reverend Wright and Bill Ayers had visited the White House.
Yeah, only it wasn't.
You didn't read the whole story, dummies.
I wonder if those guys were actually just, they found a couple of guys named Jeremiah Wright and William Ayers and said, hey, you want to visit the White House?
Well, sure, okay.
Just write your name down here if you want to go in.
Right. Okay. Hey, we got it. Whenever we got to release the list, William Ayers and Jeremiah Wright will be on there. The wing nuts will go batshit.
Well, I still think, if that's the case, then we got to find somebody in this country named Karl Marx. And we got to put him on Limbaugh's email list.
Or Friedrich Engels.
Oh, Joseph Goebbels.
Yeah, that'll work.
You know, I laugh about that. You know, we're kidding about that. It's like, say, you know, people like that. I used to work years ago. I worked with a man named Donald Duck.
Sure.
I mean, he used to have to get his license up sometimes, show people that was his name. But you know what I mean? It's one of those things. It's like, you guys just...
Well, wasn't there a great...
have that name.
I'm thinking, it was part of a nickname, but the great drummer did a lot of drumming for Eric Clapton, Donald Duck Dunn.
Hmm.
No, he was a bass player.
Yeah, but you know what I mean? It's one of those things. It's like, you know, something... Every once in a while, they used to do it in our paper, you know, put out the people, about 10 different people, the people named Benjamin Franklin and people named, you know, and all this stuff. And it's like, hey, you know, it depends where the... Like you said, it's like the thing with Koch or Coach or whatever you want to say. It depends how you pronounce it and all that, so... Who knows? But the other thing was, I was just curious to see what now, like I said, I was going to watch this, see if they start grabbing it. We got to get all the Muslims out of the army now. Time for.
That's going to take some doing because there's a bunch of them.
I know, but you know good and well that's what they're. Oh, like I say, I think already that I'm looking at something, Mr. Dodds is already on that too. They need to be intensely interrogated.
Oh, sweet Jesus.
Of course, you know how that is. It's like, well, I hate to tell you this, Lou, but before I question them, there's a whole bunch of skinheads in the Army now that I'd really like to have talked to, too.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, the people that, because George W. Bush broke the military, the people that the Army decided was okay to take in is a pretty unhealthy lot.
I know they took the filter off. It's like anybody wants in, we'll let you in, and we'll give you guns, big guns. But God, no, these people don't need any more heavy weapons. They probably already outmatch you guys anyway. But it's just one of those things. You're just sitting there looking at some of this stuff, and you're just kind of going. Sometimes it's like, please tell me, God, somewhere this puppet got to say the onion. Please, got to say the onion.
Yeah, and you know, while Lou Dobbs is out there wanting all the Muslims in the Army interrogated, it occurs to me, well, it doesn't occur to me, this was sent to me, your fellow Tennessean, David, said the whole thing in Fort Hood is beginning to sound like another case of a flawed human being needed by the war machine that needs to be shipped to the meat grinder regardless of his problems. you know, not quite good enough to be kept stateside, but plenty good enough to be sent over there. Oh, son, you're inclined to rape? Yeah, well, be a good soldier and get on the plane. Oh, son, you battered women? Get on the plane. Be a good soldier.
Well,
oh, son, you're deranged and you don't know how to counsel our disturbed? Ah, we're short on bodies over there. Get on the plane and be a good soldier.
What it might be showing us is how short we are and have people doing the counseling. You know, we've been trying to help the soldiers. It may be time to help the counselors, too. It's like, y'all need to take a year off from this, clear your heads before you come back and do it. Because, I mean, dear Lord, you know, if they've been listening to that for 6 or 7 years, these soldiers coming back and, you know, trying to help them, but listening to just god-awful stories.
And, of course, the Council on American-Islamic Relations, CARE, came out today and said, we deplore this horrible act and we demand that the individual be punished to the full extent of the law. You see, but that one misses the point, too.
I know.
I mean, I know that the wingnuts and such want to, well, you know, a bunch of naval gays and liberals. But, you know, if you take a long, hard look at why this guy did what he did, which means you don't send him to the horizontal crucifixion room or the gas chamber or the firing squad or the gallows.
You're sure what the heck went on.
Until you know exactly what went, because the whole thing you'd like to, when one of these things happens, what you'd like to have happen is for it not to happen again.
It's like, I'm glad, I was just happy, no, I don't say happy, excuse the term. I was just relieved to hear that we finally have one that we actually got before he managed to blow his own head off. You know, usually with these, you catch them just after they've emptied the gun into themselves. So maybe, you know, with work, they can figure out what exactly made him snap. And we're assuming that's what happened. Now, I accept it. We may not be right. But at least we're going to ask. We ain't going to just first of all say, shoot, line him up against the wall and shoot him. Then we'll ask what happened. You know, but that's just the way it'll go. Oh, one other thing. If you get a chance to, if you don't go there, go to Comedy Central, and you've got that stuff. And the one they had the other night, you see the hour they had with Al Gore. Had him on Stewart, and then turned around and had him on Colbert.
Yes.
Which was hilarious with the thing with him and Colbert. Oh, the two of them arguing against themselves.
Yeah.
Oh, like I said, some of that was just... And, well, I don't know if we have a new Saturday Night Live this weekend. I wonder if they'll touch on some of this.
Oh, it would.
Or maybe the Glenn Beck thing.
Yeah, but see, when something as sharp as what Jon Stewart did has been done, you know, you're really at pains if you follow it, because you're not going to top it. It is.
Well, I wonder if maybe somebody will do a remake of the version of his video that he did after his last surgery. Remember the one where he was about half doped up?
Yeah, ranting and raving like a crazy man. Trying to, and
those lines.
In a private for-profit hospital and winds up screaming that it's socialized medicine's killing him.
Oh, and you were talking about you know, hoping he'd interview a nurse. What a chance in hell. If he interviews maybe one of his stooges, he'll stand there and tell you, all the union people, they're down at the corner. They're not, you know, they're not working right now. You know. Because you know good well he ain't going to talk to somebody that he even thinks they have a chance to say something like, you know, the union's doing good work. He'll have one of his own stooges in there doing that.
But there's no getting around that most of the hospitals in New York are organized.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the other one. Wonder if everybody's in New York's going, Mr. Bloomberg, couldn't you just give me the $150?
Well, did you see the comparison? It just sort of blew me away.
14-1?
Well, not just that. Michael Bloomberg spent more on the New York mayoral election than the entire Norwegian contribution to, like, the World Health Organization.
It's like, Michael, if you want to do this, couldn't you just fund a UN for a year? I mean, you know, something. You know, it's like you're just watching that and just going, God, are you kidding? You spent $100 million? I mean, I think it was like 90, but... You know, some people had it bumped up to $100 million, and you're sitting there going, $100 million for that job? Oh, and on the little side step here, I'm going to get off, I promise. We see Mr. Carrick had apparently pled guilty.
Bernie,
or going to plead guilty or something. Said yes, he did lie or something about. I ain't even been following. I just saw that pop up, and I went, damn, I was wondering where Bernie been, what rock Bernie been hiding under. I'm going to say, I thought he was back driving for Giuliani again.
Yeah, is it safe for me to sneak out and plead guilty to all the dirty stuff I did? Okay.
Well, like I say, just for five seconds, I promise we'll get this out of the way. Anything good you're looking for this weekend other than the LSU-Alabama game?
I need LSU to win.
Okay. Well, I thought tonight the boys from the Blue Carpet are playing down in Louisiana. They said that's about the last game they even have a chance of losing.
Yeah, and that's not a real serious chance either.
No, but apparently it's better than what the rest of them are. Apparently the rest of them, it's like they could send the second team out and beat.
No, I sat there and watched that godforsaken game last Friday night.
Oh, okay.
And it was just, the Mountain. It was pathetic. The Mountaineers were just pathetic.
Well, this week we get to play one of our favorite games, our every other year game, get to play the boys from Memphis.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, that's right, that's right.
Yeah, we do that every other year, so it takes up one of those non-SEC spots.
Think you'll be okay?
Oh, yeah, well, if they got their heads on straight right now, if they went out, which some people are saying they can't, but if they went out, they wind up being 8-4.
Which is a darn sight better than I think most people expected.
Well, the other one was that apparently that Mr. Slive decided he ended up having to fine Urban a whole $30,000. It's like Mike sitting there going, Urban, I just told everybody that you can't badmouth officials, and you stand up and badmouth officials. Now how am I supposed to not punish you? And you notice it took him a day to figure out what to do.
Oh, and speaking of SEC football, the second funniest thing I've seen all day comes from The Onion.
Okay.
And this will speak especially broadly to SEC fans because it's, again, these guys are geniuses. And this in particular headline, SEC replay official overturns Roe v. Wade. A Southeastern Conference replay official conducting a video review of a sideline catch during the Alabama-Tennessee game Saturday overturned Roe v. Wade, the 1973 U.S. Supreme Court ruling granting women the right to abortions. Well, I certainly don't know what the refs were looking at down on the field to make that call, CBS analyst Gary Danielson said moments after the controversial ruling came in. A woman's right to choose her reproductive future is clearly covered by the constitutional right to privacy, and that guy certainly didn't have control of the ball when he went out of bounds. Confirming the conference stood by the decision, an SEC spokesperson also said that officials would be disciplined for last week's Florida-Mississippi State game, in which a grave error was made when a replay call upheld both a Florida touchdown, in which the ball carrier had clearly fumbled before crossing the goal line, and Brown versus Board of Education.
Oh.
Genius. Pure genius.
That's what I say. It's one of those things. Like I say, it's shameful, but it's getting to the point. Like I say, when I want a real news anymore on the box, I go to Stewart, Colbert, and Barr when he's on. So it's just one of the things. It's like, God, is this where we're down to now?
I know.
All right, but y'all have a good weekend.
All right,
I'll catch you next week.
Go Vols.
See you. All right, bye.
Later, Luke. Bye now. And I went to that Onion site, and you know how I feel about radio. I'm a radio geek. And I see an ad for a film coming out November 13th, Pirate Radio, the new comedy from the creator of Love Actually. I'm actually kind of interested in this because I wonder if there's any... I knew long ago, went to school with, a young woman who actually worked in pirate radio out in the English Channel. I wonder if this is based on any of that. I don't know. But at any rate, we'll have to wait and see. On to the phones, he said, after dithering. Hey, welcome to the program.
You don't so much want a air bubble. No.
I'll settle for the air bubble. Nothing complicated. Nothing curable. You know, and when thinking of Glenn Beck, Susan, I think of that that great line where someone was talking about a loathsome person having had some tragic event, and the person responding said, "Gee, I hope it didn't hurt too little."
Yeah, well, the thing is, the staph infections they have these days in hospitals have a tendency to kill you. I know, it killed a friend of mine in a hospital. She went in for minor surgery. She never came out. Staph infection. Just whop. It's just, and in hospitals, it's endemic. Just ask Agnes. She'll tell you all about staph infections. Anyway, the reason I called is you're going to get a laugh out of this.
Okay.
This just happened on the intro. I'm kind of multitasking you. David Schuster standing in for Ed, and he had Tom Tancredo on to talk. And he was up against, he had him with Marcos Melitus. And Tancredo made the mistake of saying something nasty about the VA healthcare system. In other words, he pulled a lie out of his butt. Melito said, I'm a veteran, and I haven't got any problems with the VA health system. I think it's great. Tancredo puffed himself up like a horny toad and demanded an apology. He didn't get one. And then he yanked his mic off and stomped off the set.
Beautiful.
I love it. And speaking of beautiful moments, which are probably this one, you're probably never going to see anything. While, by the way, before I get started on that coal article with the little cartoons.
Yes.
Is up for our listeners. Is you can see it. It's up on the main page at the Head On Radio website.
Oh, okay, wonderful.
Yeah, I put it up there earlier today. The other thing I call about is something that the mainstream media never mentioned, and you will probably see nothing about it. While Boehner was mangling the Constitution and complaining about government-sponsored health care, a guy in the audience was having what appeared to be a heart attack. So, of course, the Capitol doctor service and ambulance service rushed to the rescue. And being funded by the Capitol.
Right. In other words, the teabagger's miserable life was saved by some government-run health care.
Which I thought, like you said, God is an iron. You know, you just can't beat that.
That's true. So.
And if anybody thinks that the Republican proposal for, you know, is sensible for selling insurance across state lines, here's what the meat of it is. They want to be able to sell insurance from, say, places like the Marianas Islands, which have no regulations, and then sell them from there all over the country under the regulations of the Marianas Islands. And you cannot do anything about it. That's the point. It's called sweatshop insurance.
Jesus.
God, ain't it nice?
Yep.
I would be only willing to go along with that if it was mandatory that all members of Congress were forced to have that kind of insurance. Which means you know the thing's going to fail. Because under there's the...
Well, the Republicans themselves couldn't get covered.
They couldn't qualify, yeah. Yeah, there's another article up on the Horn homepage. They couldn't qualify under their own proposal. Because a lot of them have pre-existing conditions and they're getting up there. John McCain, he couldn't qualify. He's a cancer survivor.
Yeah, sorry, Mr. Pre-existing condition.
Yeah, go die.
Quickly, as Alan Grayson noted.
Yeah, God, I just love Alan Grayson.
Hard not to, even with his microphone turned off. Yes.
Yeah, I thought that was just... That shows how scared of him they are. Go, Alan. Yeah.
Well, his money bomb worked pretty well, so hopefully they won't be... But they're going to turn all the big guns on him. I don't know who they're going to find to run against him. Probably some teabag freeper.
Well, they're having to get somebody from out of the district because they can't find anybody in a district who's got the nerve to do it. Because they know he'll kill them.
Whatever happened to you have to live in the district?
That's what I don't understand. I thought it was law. You had to be in the district.
Well, I mean, I remember, when I was reading the biography of Winston Churchill. You know, he'd get thrown out of office, and then he'd run for office from East Nail Clippingshire. And he didn't even own property, or he'd never even been there, but he wanted to be their member of parliament. So he could.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'll get emails from people saying, Bob, there's no East Nail Clippingshire. And, Bob, that's not how it works. But, I mean, I'm just talking about what was written. I was always under the impression that you had to live in the at least make a passing attempt to live in the district. You know, at least own, a little, some crappy little apartment or something.
Now, I thought you, at the very least, had to have a post office box or something. You know, that showed you had some vague claim to it. Which is why Hillary went and she and Bill went trotting off to New York. I don't understand this. Oh, duh. Chuck DeVore. Who's Chuck DeVore?
No help here.
According to Huffington Post, he is the latest conservative darling.
Oh, dear. Does he moose hunt in Alaska? I mean, what's his teabag and street cred?
California Republican. Ties to birthers and tea partiers.
Well, you know, I saw where the creep who's running in Illinois is trying to running for U.S. Senate in Illinois is trying to get Sarah Palin's endorsement, but when he was asked about Glenn Beck's endorsement, his response was, what an interesting fellow he is.
Well, I have to admit he shows a certain amount of taste.
Yeah, but not much if he's still chasing that Palin endorsement.
Well, yeah, that's true.
Tell him it's going to take a $50,000 gift card from Neiman Marcus.
I've forgotten how to do Godzilla from Wasilla.
I prefer Caribou Barbie. It suits her better.
Yeah, but I didn't invent Caribou Barbie. I try to work with what I come up with.
Yeah, but, you know, Steffi's willing to share. Yeah, she's perfectly happy.
I don't know if she came up with Caribou Barbie.
She did. I was listening when she did.
Because I thought it was just sort of, because one day it was just all over the internets.
Oh, and hey, I got to bring it up. It's shallow, and...
Well, if we're going to be shallow, this is the night to, I mean, this is Friday on the front porch. It was made for shallow.
I have to bring it up. Carrie Prejean.
Oh, I got it. No, save it. It's in the stack, trust me. I got a bumper for it and everything.
Okay, I'll just say it's a giggle and get off the phone and snicker a lot.
Exactly. All right, Susan, you take care and have yourself a good weekend. The Ducks playing this weekend?
Yeah, they're playing Stanford.
You know, Stanford's not exactly chopped liver this year, so.
No, they're not, and so we are crossing fingers and toes, and we shall see what we shall see. It was about this time last year that you know, when everything seemed to be, you know, we seemed to be headed straight towards Rose Bowl, and then quarterback goes down with a season-ending knee injury. So what we're going to do is we're going to just not talk about anything but Stanford.
Right, exactly.
We're not going to jinx ourselves.
Yeah, especially.
I'm going to watch the game because otherwise it might jinx it.
Well, that's, you know, that's well, I had turned off, the sixth game of the World Series in the eighth inning, the other night, just hoping that maybe if I wasn't watching, Philadelphia could get well. Well, there I did it. There I did it again with the Yankee fans.
Yeah. I'm kind of neutral as far when it comes to baseball. Although I used to be a real addict. Of course, that was when I was a tomboy, baseball player. Now that I'm old and chubby, I'm more of a... It's not something I'm just all that passionate about. Sorry, folks, I'm not. I think what turned me off was the strikes.
How so?
When you got guys making what these guys are making.
Oh, I thought you were talking. I thought you were talking about the strike zone.
No. The strikes that killed the season.
Well, you know what? I didn't get too burned up about those because when you've got the ownership as rich as the ownership is, and you know the history of baseball.
The first one I didn't mind. It was the second one that did me in.
If you like reading about baseball at all, you can't go wrong, and I'm trying to remember the author now. Someone will tell me right quick. But the name of the book is Ball 4. And it was, it came out, in the early 60s, maybe the late 50s, early 60s, though, I think. And it is absolutely, you get it now, and it's got, an update, but it absolutely set the baseball world on its ear, because for the first time, somebody was breaking the unwritten code of silence, the omerta of baseball, if you will. And shortly after Ball 4 came Curt Flood, who lost his free agency case, but in trying to get it, opened the door for free agency. Because up until then, the baseball team owned your butt. You know, there was that hateful thing called the reserve clause.
Yeah, and that's why I supported the first one. But you know, when free agency came in, and you know, the salaries went sky high and so on and so forth. That's when I started, you know. And I think more than anything, it's the owners that did it.
Oh, the owners! Yeah. The owners have a bad case of someone stop me before I spend again, and
yeah.
That's what you know.
Oh,
with no offense to Yankee fans, that's why I can't be a Yankee fan. Where's the fun in rooting for a team that just gets bought every year? You go out and you buy the best in the league, and then you know, boom.
Yeah.
But let me throw one more thing out there, because there's actually a baseball news story out there. One of the hottest and most fascinating pitchers in baseball today is a kid named Tim Lincecum, pitches for the Giants. And he has this unique, his father was an aerospace engineer at Boeing or some such, and he grew up in the Seattle area. And his father taught him to pitch, and they went through the mechanics of pitching, and he taught his son this almost uncopyable motion that makes Tim Lincecum just a genius pitcher. If he had a baseball team behind him, he'd be hell on wheels. Like, you know, when he eventually goes to the Yankees, because they'll buy him.
Yeah.
The guy who invented the Tommy John surgery, the shoulder elbow surgery, he's down at the University of Alabama, Birmingham. He fixed Tommy John and actually made Tommy John a better pitcher than he was coming out than he was going in. He analyzed Tim Lincecum's motion and said, this kid may pitch for decades because he's not doing to his arm what pitching a baseball usually does to the arm.
Which is ruin it.
Right. For instance, you never hear about even the most hardcore of fast-pitch women's softball pitchers needing Tommy John surgery because the shoulder is designed to do what they're doing.
Yeah.
Throwing a baseball overhand and putting the rotation and spin on it that you do is contrary to everything that evolution has made a shoulder and an elbow to do. Okay, so we've got all that. Tim Lincecum is a joy to watch pitch. Well, he just got busted for possession of marijuana.
Oh, crap.
And, you know, it just highlights, you know, how stupid our marijuana laws are in this country. But, you know, he was busted in Washington or Oregon or somewhere, or maybe in Northern California, I forget what. And, you know, the cop was real low key. He was sort of like, oh, yeah, I mean, I write these tickets all the time. I mean, look where I am. You know, no big deal, no, oh, my God, it's an athlete smoking dope. You know, none of that. But what I'll be curious to find out, Susan, is how Major League Baseball responds to this. Because on the one hand, when you take a look at Tim Lincecum's ERA, you realize that it certainly hasn't done anything, to hinder his ability. You know, kind of like what's his name, the swimmer. Didn't make him a worse swimmer. And so the thing is, okay, so you can't argue that it was bad for him. On the other hand, however, do you think Major League Baseball, which has done some stupid things in its time, do you think Major League Baseball might try to punish him and call it a performance-enhancing drug? I really don't think they want to do that because the DEA and the National Drug Control Policy Administration and yada, 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 and all the people trying to keep kids from smoking pot. You can't call it that. You can't call it a performance-enhancing drug.
You have every kid in the country on it. The ones that aren't on it. Would you like a little piece of political trivia?
Sure.
You know, Carly Fiorina came out and declared for the Senate seat for that Barbara Boxer has.
Right.
Okay. In her resume, Carly Fiorina is the former CEO of HP.
Right.
Well, besides running HP into the ground.
Which she did.
Oh, yeah. Do it fairly well. I worked for a subcontractor of HP when she was CEO, and we did customer support. You know what the avowed policy of HP was during her tenure?
In what regard?
For manufacturing and customer support. In fact, all operations except corporate headquarters.
What?
Overseas. Overseas. Get it out of the country.
Sure, yeah.
And they made no bones about it. Now, if it came, if they were willing to talk about it to a in front of a flunky like me who was a low-end customer service rep to a working for a subcontractor. You know that everybody in that company knew exactly what was going on. And eventually all of the customer service was outsourced overseas. The manufacturing is already outsourced overseas. the repair, they had a repair center in Calexico. I don't know if it still is or not. They might have outsourced it. But the whole idea was to get everything, literally everything, out of the country.
Yeah. Cut wages.
Yeah.
Raise corporate profits.
$5 an hour. Why pay, well, for a customer service rep, why pay $12 an hour, which is what I was making when I was laid off, when you could outsource it and pay anywhere from, depending on the country, $2 to $7. Gotta love it. This is what Carly Fiorina should be asked about. This is what people should be talking. This is what Carly.
Yeah, ma'am. Why do you hate American working families?
Yeah. See, why did you outsource all of those American jobs when you were running HP?
Do you really think that she's much of a threat to Barbara Boxer, though, honestly?
Hell no. But personally, I would like to see her fumble it, because I know she's gonna. Or she's gonna flat out lie.
You just want to see her blistered, that's all.
Yeah.
It's no different than me sitting here going, air bubble, air bubble.
Hey, revenge is a dish best eaten cold. And if I can sit here and watch her hem and haw and sputter, hey, it'll go a long way towards making me feel a little bit better for being unemployed in 2004.
Yep. Suffer, Carly. Suffer.
Yeah.
Susan, have yourself a great weekend.
Give my love to Agnes and the kids.
Sure will. Tell Donald we said hi.
Okie doke.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye.
News Ninja Susan calling from Oregon, and let's roll along. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Yeah, Ed.
Hey, good evening. Sounds like you got some interesting stuff going on there, right?
Well, we're just carrying on. It's just Friday.
Yeah. You know, she touched on a subject that I was going to bring up. You know, they holler bringing these jobs back, and there's so many questions around this outsourcing. They seem to have a problem on how to get the jobs back. You can't create, first of all, because of the layoffs, people are not demanding a product, just the ones working. Well, if they put these people back to work doing those jobs that they used to do, in other words, bring them back in a reverse order that they sent them out. And if that's beyond me, then tell me. Because I just don't understand what the deal is. Either you make up the difference from them, either in high tariffs or taxes, or they bring them back. And that's as far as I can go about that. And that's the way you create jobs, is bring back the ones that we had.
That and rejuvenating an industrial manufacturing base in this country.
Yeah. Well, I'm not familiar with the economics of the situation of rejuvenating the base, but I do know that if you brought those jobs back, there's going to be people waiting with open arms, and they use every excuse in the world while they sent them out of here. But what they really
should well know. Well, consider this, Ed. If they bring the jobs back, so to speak, you think they're going to bring them back at the wages they were paying before? No. Because if you look around this country, I mean, the unemployment rate is now 10.2%. It's the highest since 1983. Wow. We suffered what the official number watchers are saying was a shocking job loss in October.
Well, they're saying, really, counting your people that's working part-time, that the full unemployment rate is 17.5.
Yeah, we at this point, it's the Great Recession, and there are some who would still argue that it's a depression. The only problem being that Wall Street, as usual, seems to be doing better now that you know, now that they've gotten theirs. They just don't want us to have ours. But the point that I was going to make, Ed, is that if you bring those jobs back, if you've ever seen one of these situations where somebody says that they've got 100 jobs to fill, and it happens all over the country, you've got 100 jobs to fill, 10,000 people will file applications. That means that it is most assuredly a buyer's market, right?
That's right.
And therefore the wages are?
They're lower.
Right.
And benefits.
So even if those overseas jobs come back, corporate America still wins because they're going to come back at low wages.
Well, at least some of the people, though, would be making more than what unemployment or employment, unemployment, social, or whatever, they'd be making more than what it pays. And I know they'd have to be working for it, but at least this millions of people would be back to work if they got it. And it's still just beyond me why something ain't done. It's like one guy said, we don't even pick the fruit that's reachable. You know, the low swinging stuff, which, you know, I don't know in depth much about it, but it's common sense to me to say that, you know, when they tell me that, it's more complicated than just bringing them back. No, you just bring them back. And if that's too hard to understand, I'd like to know why.
Well, the complication lies in the fact that when it comes to manufacturing jobs, okay, I'm not talking about, for instance, what Susan was talking about with, say, a customer service, you know, technical support job that wound up in the Philippines or some such as that. That's a different kettle of fish. But manufacturing jobs, Ed, a lot of them, millions of them, have gone to China. And I had the privilege of sitting in and listening to some really smart people talk last Thursday about what our relationship with China really, really does to working people in this country. And the fact of the matter is, if you want to distill it down to a really simple statement, and I mean no vulgarity in this, but it is what it is, China owns our ass.
Yeah.
In other words, part of their strategy, and I can't repeat this often enough because it's such a hair-raising thing, every time an American company goes to China to manufacture goods, they have to strike a deal with the People's Republic of China that says for the first 5 years that they're in operation, 85% of everything they make will be made for export to the United States. Now, any company who signs an agreement like that can't maintain an employer base in making twice as much of what it needs to make in two places. So that means the American jobs go bye-bye.
Mm-hmm.
Because the labor is dramatically cheaper, and I don't know that China's a communist country anymore. It seems to me like they're a proto-fascist corporatist wonderland now. Because, you know, they can chain people to tables. They can tell them you'll live here and you'll go home twice a year. And they don't have any say-so, and they don't have any unions, and they don't have any freedom. And they don't have much in the way of pay. And so the American corporation manufactures 85% of its goods for the first 5 years and ships it back here for export, and in turn pays the communist, or whatever, Chinese, for the privilege of doing business over there, and whatever production techniques it has to in turn turn those over to the People's Republic of China as well, so that within that 5-year window, the People's Republic of China can then build its own factories and put the sucker out of business. Add to that the fact that that George W. Bush, and again, this is one of those that you can't emphasize highly enough, Ed. When George W. Bush came into office, he was dealing with a surplus. And as quickly as he could, he gave it away, and he even gave away more than the surplus. He gave away money that he didn't have to give away, so that we think it's bad now. We haven't even begun to see bad, because the chickens really come home to roost in 2012.
What George W. Bush's administration managed to do is screw up America for the next 8 years after George W. Bush. And it was deliberate, Ed. It was intentional. And frankly, if you ask me, it was treasonous.
Well, you know how I feel about him, too. And he's the one, you know, the Republicans are hollering at Obama now for not pulling us out of this mess. Why don't they call on George Bush and see it, get him to reverse the action on that, too, and show us how to get out of this mess?
And see, that's the whole thing, is that, you know, George Bush spent up our surplus, but then because he wanted these wars of choice and because he wanted to pay off his rich buddies, he not only gave away what we had set aside, he borrowed more. And he literally papered China with for all intents and purposes, bad checks. Because they didn't have anything backing them at the time. So that even if we did something, passed a law, whatever, said, you know, manufacturer's got to come home from China. Bring the jobs home. Well, China could just call its debt, and we'd be so far past bankrupt, the light from bankrupt would be a million years reaching us.
Well, it would be, you know, it definitely is bad either way. But if you ain't got it, you ain't got it. So they can't collect it. What are they gonna do? You know.
There's that little three-letter vulgarity. But they've got a few billion people who can take it out of our ass.
Yeah. Well.
You know, they build, they might build 13 warships a year. They build that in a month.
Mm-hmm. No, I know they got all the war equipment that a person could ask for. And we're not in shape for war right now anyway.
And that's the whole thing. This, you know, for all the talk about national security and so forth, Ed, that the Republicans like to prattle on about, they are largely responsible for sending our ability to provide for our troops overseas. Mm-hmm. If we got it, you know, I'm not talking about some little brush fire war that we can't win in Afghanistan or Iraq, but if we got in an honest-to-God shooting war, we're toast.
Yeah.
We don't,
receive the day we're only going to be in a shooting war anyway. Not past what's going in Afghanistan and.
Right. We can't beat them.
No.
If we sent 100,000 more troops into Afghanistan, we couldn't win.
Oh, you know where I stand on the war.
Oh, I know you do. But the whole point is, you know, if you compare now with, the Great Depression, you know, we had an industrial manufacturing base that was idled at the time that World War II broke out. It was idled. All it had to do was be cranked up again with a big infusion of government money. And that's what we did. And that's what General Motors and Ford and Grumman and Lockheed and Martin and Curtis and on and on and on and on. That's what, you know, building stuff for the war. And it absolutely revitalized our manufacturing base. But that's the difference. We had an idled manufacturing base back then. Now we have a non-existent one. We have a non-existent manufacturing base because in order to do all that stuff they wanted to do in China, literally, I'm not exaggerating. They took manufacturing plants in this country and took them apart bolt by bolt by bolt and put them on a boat and shipped them to China and rebuilt them. They aren't here anymore, Ed.
Yeah, I know.
And I'm not yelling at you. You know that. I mean,
that's what burns me up about, and George Bush and them are not going to go on trial. They're still allowed to live in this country. The stuff that guys like myself and thousands of other veterans laying down all they had, you know, meaning their life is necessary. And, you know, I understand this guy, like the one that did all the shooting today. But it's still, he had no business. If a man says he talks like he did or like they said he did, then you should let him go. We had a guy that kept going AWOL, you know, on the ship I was on, And finally, they just absolutely didn't go after him no more. He was from West Virginia, too. I hate to say it, but if a man has got that kind of attitude, to start with, he's nothing but an extra anchor on somebody that's carrying him. And this general that got on, General Casey today, man, that dang guy could blow up an onion sack. He's more of a politician than the politician he had there. Did you see that?
No, but I read about it.
Well, I'm telling you, that General Casey, he would turn it over to the politician, and he couldn't stand still till he got pointing to him, what's your question, you know, that type of attitude. It's no wonder our armed forces has got the lack of discipline, the suicide rate, the AWOL, and all that goes with it when you got leaders like them liver-bellied. Yeah, I mean, they absolutely, like I said, they could blow up an onion sack. I despise people like that. You had first class in chiefs that was better than these guys that call themselves generals now. But they should have let that guy go when the signs started showing up of his resistance to the military and to the discipline that goes with it. And I was shocked when I saw him in that robe, or whatever you call that thing he was wearing. It looked like a bathrobe to me. And I'm not making fun of his religion, but, you know, usually if an officer's going on the base, he's in his uniform. So, but anyway, I'm going to get off of here. I give one more comment.
Sure.
People, and you probably heard it, people that are against this health bill and run their mouth, they ought to get behind it because they may be the one that gets extended life if it goes through. It's just that simple. People, if against it, it's against living a long, healthy life. And that's about all I got to say about that. So I appreciate your time.
Oh, no trouble at all, Ed. Good hearing from you.
Yeah.
You doing all right otherwise?
Nothing out of the not much out of the ordinary. I got a little bit of back problems. I don't know where that come along at. But I've developed that in the last, I haven't played golf since September a year ago.
Well, you know, I haven't been out on the course. You haven't been out on the course. I ran into our mutual friend, and he said he hadn't swung a club in so long he'd forgot what they looked like. Mel, it's just sad how life gets in the way of leisure.
Yeah, well, they ain't took my 500 rummy game away from me yet.
remind me not to sit down across the table from you with a deck of cards between us.
I'll have to do that sometime. I keep about 6 or 7 decks here, all of them marked in a different place.
I understand. four or five aces under the tablecloth, that kind of thing. Yeah.
That grandbaby of mine even knows how to play now. And she knows the simple game. She's only 10, but she knows war and crazy 8. And if you ain't careful, she'll lay down 3 cards at a time on you playing crazy 8. You know, she'll put the trump card on top and then put 2 under it and lay them all down at the same time.
Oh, I've got a feeling she learned at the feet of the master, Ed.
Well, I've really tried to teach her the right way and get on her for cheating, but it's a natural thing for women, I think.
Now, don't do that. I'll get email for the rest of the night.
Good deal. You need to keep busy.
Yeah, because I live a life of indolent boredom.
Yeah, women, I was just kidding. Bob, I'll talk to you later.
Ain't going to touch that with a 20-foot pole.
All right.
All right, you take care and have a good weekend, Ed.
All right, and you too, and tell everybody to say hello.
Sure will. Bye now.
Bye.
That's our neighbor Ed here in Fayette County. I'll tell you what, yeah, he will beat your rear end with a with nothing but a deck of cards. Ain't no doubt about it. About 29 minutes after the hour, you know the phone number. Got a couple of lines open if you want to jump in on the conversation. It would be best to do that now as opposed to later, so that we don't have to hustle through. So that we don't have to hustle through the entire, five calls in 15 minutes. That's not fun. 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. Locally, if you want to save us a nickel or a buck, and you've got some sort of long-distance dialing plan that doesn't cost you anything, there's always 304-658-3333. It's just that easy. So learn it, know it, use it. If you can't call or don't want to call or too shy to call, you know, those people do exist, I know for a fact. You can always reach us at Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid, at gmail.com. That's how easy it is. Jump in the chat room if you want to. Head on radionetwork.com/chatroom. But let's go to the phones right now and see who we got. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello?
Oh, hi, Bob.
Hi.
It's Brian from New Hampshire. I was just playing some Irish Gaelic music.
Sounded like a little Van Morrison there.
It was. But this was Irish pub songs. It's through winamp.com. I just got on there. I'm going over what's happened with that shooting out there in Fort Hood.
Yeah.
Our troops have been, these backdoor drafts. The so-called central front in the war on terror for the inbred blue-blood president of ours, George W. Bush, and he's handed the presidency to try to pass on all the blame to my fellow half-Irish and American lad there named Barack Obama. I don't agree with his corporate leanings there, Barack Obama, but I wish him 8 years of a healthy imperial rule there. But I have a sense that I'm looking over some of this stuff there. I believe so. My Celtic ancestry, your Celtic ancestry, maybe not your Germanic side there, the Kincaid clan there, but I believe that the Dorians, the invaders of what became Sparta in ancient Greece, they might have been Celtic people. And people.
Oh, you've read that too, huh?
The big people in Asia Minor as well, too, in modern-day Turkey there. Is now, you might have been Pergamon and other kingdoms might well have been Celtic kings and Celtic peoples there. It talks about what we're doing to the Afghan people. It's nearly 2,500 years ago and mankind has not yet learned. And I think even I'm going by Plutarch on Sparta. He was a Roman scholar on the Spartans. It just is a saying there by Antalcidas, talking about Aeschylus, who had been wounded in a battle against the Thebans. And the Thebans, that's, you know, there was the famous play there, Seven Against Thebes, the Heracles or Hercules, the demigod helped defend it and that and all. He goes, but he talks about Aeschylus receiving his wounds there. And there's battles against the Thebans, and these were people that the Spartans have been constantly trying to oppress and enslave, even nearly as much as they did the Messenians. But he says to Antalcidas, says to him, and he was a thinking man, and at A4 of the Spartans, they did have thinking, reasoning leaders there who even kept their own kings in line. But Aeschylus, after he'd been complaining about being wounded in battle by the Thebans, and Tilsidas says to him, you are receiving your fee for having taught people to fight who had neither the wish nor the knowledge to do so against you. For it was thought that they had become warlike as a result of Aeschylus' continual campaigns against them, against the Thebans. And what do we expect of the Afghans or some Iraqi peasant or some Vietnamese peasant in the time of Lyndon Johnson's lies of the Gulf of Tonkin? And what would come to be the Vietnam War for those war profiteers, those thieves at that time, what did we expect? What do we expect from people? What we're doing to their land there in Pakistan, in Afghanistan, it's now this cute term they have for AFPAC. And the fact remains our troops are overtaxed, or they're exhausted mentally and physically, that there's so much post-traumatic stress disorder. I know two people, maybe it's three now, that I've personally that I met through the internet, namely veterans of the Iraq War who have killed themselves. It just could not take it anymore, just could not adjust back to life, and just could not deal with the fact that Americans do not want to face up to the reality of what we've done to Iraq, what we've done to Afghanistan.
Well, you know, we talk about what isn't there in Afghanistan, you know, infrastructure. Meaning,
there's gas and oil pipelines. That's
right.
That's why.
Brian, we talk about what's not there in terms of infrastructure, clean running water, reliable electricity, you know, roads of any decent quality. We talk about all that. But how? Why in God's name would we think that there would be there? I mean, it's not just the Americans. It's the Americans. It's the Russians. It's the British. It's everybody. Apparently, everybody with an urge toward empire has gone and screwed up Afghanistan. Every time they get a road paved, some big bully comes along and bombs it.
Bob, going back to a Greek Hellenic lad, there he was not a Spartan. Certainly, he was a Macedonian, but he was. If we really are the American, if we still keep the Constitution, at least even one-tenth of it to heart, then the ancient Greeks were our forebears, in maybe not in ethnic terms, but in cultural and political terms. And Alexander the Great, the greatest general in all of human history, I would say, and also a homosexual as well, or a bisexual, who this beautiful Bactrian princess, that's basically today's
Afghani.
Afghanistan.
Yeah. Roxana.
Roxana, yes. And he had, but his greatest love affairs apparently were with an Indian man, and he nearly threw himself in suicidally against some Indians who were fighting back against their Macedonian or Hellenic Empire oppressors there at that time. In that part of the world too, but Afghanistan is especially they are like the Scotsmen of that area.
Cranky hill people, Bob. There we are again, cranky hill people.
Yep, and it's like the Chechens in southern Russia there in the Caucasus region there. But at the same time, the Chechens hate the Georgians even more than the Russians, and the Russians used that when the Georgians in August of 2008 they tried to invade. And they killed 20 Russian peacekeepers in cold blood there in South Ossetia, in that region that the UN and NATO and all that had worked out a peaceful way to adjudicate and to have some kind of plebiscite or something eventually. But the fact is, our empire cannot last. America was not built on the ice. There were some ideals even, I would say, during the Roman Empire, during other empires as well. The Ottoman Empire, that they took on some of the Spartan qualities, and they took the Greek, they used the Turkish cuisine apparently in food, they would borrow from their nomadic ancestry anyways, the Turkic people there that are all over Central Asia and what will become Eastern Europe, what will become today's Russia. There's a lot of Turkic and Slavic blood, and nobody knows who anybody is really descended from when you look in the thousands of years before that. In the migrations of man, and we're just all come from the same primordial language, proto-nostratic language, they call it, or something, but out of the first modern man was really out of the real Mother Africa. It really did come from that. I don't care about all this biblical stuff there. That can, here and there, it can be fit in with that, but it doesn't match the real anthropological, carbon 14 dating of the history, everything that it describes written. But I'm just going by the tragedy of what we haven't. I think we're even in worse shape than the Spartans of, you know, or the Peloponnesian War you talked about before a couple of weeks ago, Bob. That was the civil war of the Hellenes, of the Greek people.
And right.
They destroyed themselves there. We're trying to do that now we have these so-called patriots like this Alaska Independence Party and Ron Paul, anarchist supporter named Sarah Palin, this lunatic who that still is looked upon as a possible front runner for 2012. What has happened?
Doesn't that just make your eyes roll back in your head? It's lunacy, sheer lunacy.
Is it you know, the George Carlin joke there, another Irish immigrant there who knew how to, you learn from the tragedy of human history in our own human memory. I know as some of my, certainly my Irish Catholic and Welsh Catholic and Scottish Catholic Protestant, that a few Calvinist many persons too, that we had a few Douglas in our clans. that intermarried with the lowest barbarians of them all, of course, the Anglo-Saxons, the English. But we didn't like to bring that up in family get-togethers. That would cause the worst. You know, you'd be better to marry a Hispanic or black person than an Englishman. And so, some of those times there, you talk about in the 19th century, Ireland and Prince Edward Island and the Canadian Maritime Provinces. But the fact is, we have historical memory of oppression, and it affects us. Ireland today, it was, especially going into the late 90s, early 2000s, it was the Celtic tiger with the most highly educated per capita nation in all of Europe. And yet at the same time, Irish Catholic emigres to England in London, they consistently perform very well at all on the intelligence test there because of their constant their oppression, and there's this recurring hatred of Catholics and especially of Irish Catholics in places like London and in England where you know there's still many just English people that have gone beyond all of that. But that if we look at that and then look at the historical memory and the arrested development of our great African American brothers and sisters in this country after slavery, you know, after what they've gone through, and why do we not expect them to want to adopt something like, you know, Islam, or even look to a person who I think is a divisive figure, but this Reverend Farrakhan as being someone who is like, you know, this Rudy Giuliani there, the mayor of New York there, he tries to take credit for the drop in crime rates in the late 1990s. When the fact is, it all goes back to it nearly immediately dropped after the Million Man March, October 1995 in Washington. Whether it was 500,000 or 750,000 or 1 million black men, namely down there, they say they had no arrest really. There was no fist fights, no acts of violence whatsoever. You know, you contrast that with these tea baggers and all that, and threatening little kids, and threatening people who just want to have a health care as a right to human beings. We should have evolved far beyond that point. You're right. It should have been solved decades ago. But our nation's going through a worse than a Greek tragedy, I think, Bob. But I think that somehow hope.
I know, and hope springs eternal. You know, you talk about the suppression of cultures.
Yeah.
And you mentioned the English.
Oh, yeah.
Last night, during the program, David from Maine sent me a Google book, you know, one of those things that had been scanned and put up online.
Oh.
And it is Alexander Kincaid's History of Edinburgh, Scotland.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm proud to note that I just said Edinburgh correctly. let me just share this with you because I think you'll find it fascinating.
Okay.
Alexander Kincaid wanted to write a history of his home city. And you talk about the suppression of culture. Listen to what he has to say, and this is in the 18th century.
Right.
He says, "The barbarity and ignorance which in former ages overspread the world, with the destructive wars that from time to time have taken place, now render it in a manner impossible." This is exactly what you just said a moment ago. "Now render it in a manner impossible to determine the origin of any ancient city with precision, or even to come near it by probable conjecture. With respect to the metropolis of Scotland," let me see here, Prince kind of talk. "With respect to the metropolis of Scotland, the difficulty is even greater than in other cases. Besides the wars common to other nations and which were carried on in the usual way, it was the misfortune of this country to fall under the ravaging hands of Edward I of England, who thought it his interest to suppress the history of the nation, as well as the nation itself. For this purpose, with a policy peculiar to himself and one other tyrant, an emperor of China, he carried off the records and destroyed the ancient monuments, which might tend to elucidate the history of this country, as if he could thus have persuaded the Scots that they never had an existence as a nation before his time. It has been said, indeed, that the records carried off at that time were lately sent back. But if this was the case, we have not heard of any attempt to investigate them, and a great part are said to have been irretrievably lost in the ocean. No wonder, therefore, that we should now be unable to give any satisfactory account of the origin of our metropolis or to determine when or by whom it was founded.
Right. And that should be any people's, any nations or any tribes justly deserve right to have their real and honest history of how their culture, their cities, and their people were founded, and that was stolen from them. In much more modern American sense, it's like all the records from the World Trade Center 7, the Securities and Exchange Commission, and all that ongoing corporate robbery, including $80 billion from the electric ratepayers of the state of California, that's what helped propel Governor Arnold into office there. That was all destroyed in the World Trade Center in controlled demolition, I would call it. And that's the American people's right. Like the Wall Street theft that's ongoing. It's our right to know what really happened. It's our, after Pearl Harbor, for God's sake, they had 9 independent investigations. They started within like less than 9 days. Roosevelt even appointed a judge. It was a Republican judge who had a personal and, a political, of course, disagreements with FDR to be one of the first leading panels on the Pearl Harbor attacks and how it happened. But they had 9 of them in the years following Pearl Harbor. And that doesn't even include the military's own investigations. They had many of them what could have been done to have averted that. I agree with you. If we had just one of those AWACS planes they had today, that could have covered maybe a half of the Pacific Ocean or something. But what they had then was a very, very new technology called radar that was very, it could cover a very little area with, you didn't know what you were actually tracking. And you're talking about the biggest geographical body on the entire Earth is the Pacific Ocean. To try to cut, and that Japanese fleet, you could see in that ticket why they could sneak their way. They got lucky here and there, but why they could sneak into and come in from the north, from the and hit Pearl Harbor there. God love the people that died there, but it was still. I still say it's a military on military attack that was. But September 11th was much more evil than that. These were people in their offices. And they were told to go back to their offices after the first tower was hit, and other people were, thousands of lives could have been saved if they, this guy, Silverstein, buys the place within 6 or 8 weeks before.
Well, look, if Rudy Giuliani had simply taken the advice of his paid geniuses and gotten everybody talking on the same darned radio frequency.
Yeah, in his World Trade Center 7-2, that was supposed to be his command bunker, but he knew early in that morning that some people, very much in the know, more than perhaps even him, the mayor, told him, no, you're not going to have your emergency center is not going to be there. They pulled him back to some other area a couple of blocks back or further than that. And he knew the last fireman was removed from WTC 7 at 11:30 a.m., and it wasn't they didn't cause the demolition of it until 5:20 that night, of course, and had the English lady there broadcasting about 5 p.m. They already knew that it was coming down, the tower was coming. Everything points to the, whatever metals they have recovered, it points to a demolition, the molten lava and the like in the bottom there, the fires, the molten fires that did not burn out till December 13th of 2001, the longest burning fire of any in human history, I believe, of any structure. And this could only have happened to Stephen Jones and these other physicists can explain it better, but from a demolition, from explosive devices, not just thermite, which these civilian demolition companies use, but even thermate, which can cut through the steel even faster. And he covers that. But this Giuliani, he happened to be in the July 7th, 2005 bombings in London, the train bombings. Giuliani was there the night before that in London. he was having some kind of terrorist drill going on then, and nobody questions the guy about that. He's allowed to go on to be a prospective Republican, a presidential candidate in 2007, 2008 then. It's disgusting that we have no news media to really, you know, keep these people in line, and especially if they're Republican, and they get away with so much. It goes back, like I say, this so-called libertarian Alan Greenspan and a follower of Ayn Rand creates the greatest tax increase in history, the Social Security FICA tax, in 1983 onwards. And that's what gave us huge surpluses, which they've been stealing from, namely Republican presidents. If Al Gore had been allowed to hold his office, he would have had the lockbox in place, and they wouldn't have gotten away with that. They wouldn't have.
Funny how that went away, isn't it?
Yeah, right after, just days before that, they had to hustle George W. away from an interview or something. He kept saying, no, just remember, any military attack, he kept saying, any military attack on America, or he said something to that effect, any military emergency or something. Finally, his handlers, Karen Hughes and somebody else, had to just get him out of there. He was saying that other than that, though, you know, I'm going to keep a lockbox on Social Security, but he you know, that's just his first, his first yearly budget was not even good, had not even gone through then. It was still ongoing from the Clinton administration. And he's saying, you know, that we'll keep Social Security. Don't worry, we won't touch it. But unless there's a military attack, and he kept saying that.
And then after everything happened, he went around making that sickening, who knew I'd hit the trifecta, that
my
joke.
God,
you remember that?
I think he can reduce it all to, like, he thinks it's just a sporting event or something. It just, you know, I watched it for the first time in my life. I hadn't seen it ever. I thought it was Kevin Costner as an actor. He's here and there. I like him, but he's just kind of a plain white milk toast kind of guy there. But I just finally saw that movie Field of Dreams.
Yeah,
you know, it's his 1989 movie there he did with James Earl Jones and the.
Oh, I'm well familiar. Based on a book called Shoeless Joe.
Yeah, right. That's right. And that Kinsella guy wrote that book. Yeah, and that's the story about, and it just Shoeless Joe Jackson about it, that he was done wrong there too. Yeah, and the Black Sox scandal. But if you build it, they will come. All that. But if they try to reduce it to more than a game. To just the game, these things, these wars and death, especially if you're a brat, maybe like George W., who doesn't have to go to these wars, or Dick Cheney and all that. You didn't have the time to answer any question honestly to that Fitzgerald guy about the Valerie Plame outing there, but everything else, he has an encyclopedic memory almost, that Dick Cheney, they say, about especially whatever he's plotting next. But the Field of Dreams, though, it tells me it is a beautiful movie. I didn't think I would. I thought, you know, because Kevin Costner is not my favorite actor, but it was a beautiful movie that tells you that America still, that the dream can still come back.
Oh, I cried like a baby at that movie.
Yeah. Oh, it's a beautiful ending, and just all the lights from all the cars that are coming there. They want to go back. I remember my time when I first played my first game at Catch Myself with my father there. In a little town of Hampton, New Hampshire, here in the seacoast of New Hampshire. It brought back memories. There's things you wish you had said to your father or to your son, or done this in your life or done that. But the movie was also a very, there was time travel involved in that movie too, obviously. it was very powerful, and Burt Lancaster had a great, you know, a small part, but a powerful part there, as the Doc Graham there. Those are the kind of, you know, there's a real, you know, people with hearts and people with, you know, with soul that really bring something of the American character that's real, even though it's a movie. This love of baseball, where baseball used to be, into those guys that they would play just for room and board, and now that each player nowadays is an individual corporation, it gets back again to
Brian, those guys played for room and board, not for the love of the game, but because that was all that the owners, and they really were owners, they owned their hides, were willing to pay.
And that's what it went along and along. They made gains and gains. They had the first black Jackie Robinson player there in 1947. And Branch Rickey had to be almost like a Buddhist monk in taking the kind of insults and threats that he did there. Jackie Robinson, a great all-around athlete he was too, at University of Southern California, a great American. And then another guy, Curt Flood in the 1960s at the St. Louis Cardinals.
Right, who broke, he lost
his career basically.
He lost his own case. But that's what opened the door to free agency. You know, you mentioned the issue of racism, and I've got a fascinating little op-ed piece here from La Voz de Aztlan.
Okay.
The Voice of Aztlan, which is a Hispanic nativist, I think would probably be an appropriate word, advocacy group.
Okay. Is that from Mexico somewhere? Or?
It's out of California. But the writer is Hector Carreon.
Yeah.
My Spanish accent is terrible. But
better than mine.
he writes, Islamophobia caused shootings at Fort Hood, Texas. This was provided to me by our listener, Corey.
Yeah.
And he writes, as an engineering specialist with the 2nd Armored Division at Fort Hood, Texas during the Vietnam War, I know how racist and ethnocentric the U.S. Army can be. When I read a report by Major Nidal Malik Hassan's family that the Army officer wanted out after being constantly harassed by others in the military and was called a camel jockey, I began to understand why Major Hassan took 2 guns and shot up the place, killing 13 and wounding 30 soldiers and civilians. He says, there are certain things that the Pentagon shuts up about that godforsaken place in Central Texas. Fort Hood is located approximately 60 miles north from Austin and is the largest U.S. military installation in the world. The base is a 340-square-mile facility nestled between Killeen and Copperas Cove. The horrors that occur there almost daily, especially during times of war, is something you would not want to tell your family after coming home. Killeen is the place where the second worst mass murder in the history of the U.S. took place in 1991. He continues, Major Nidal Malik Hassan, presently in a military hospital for treatment of wounds received in the shootings, is a Muslim of Palestinian descent whose duties as a doctor of psychiatry are to treat soldiers returning from Iraq and Afghanistan totally psychotic and extremely disturbed because of their wartime experiences and mental traumas received in battle. During my 16 months at Fort Hood, there were weekly suicides by soldiers returning from Vietnam, but worst of all, was the toll paid by the families that lived at the base. Regularly, one would hear of a wife being chopped up by her disturbed GI husband, and often about their babies being dismembered in the family barracks. The fact that today, at Fort Hood, the returning soldiers are coming back from Arab and Muslim countries most probably made the situation for Major Nidal Malik Hassan particularly more difficult. I remember that during my initial military training for the Vietnam War, the racist drill sergeants would constantly demonize the slant-eyed gooks. Their objective was to instill hate and to dehumanize the enemy to the point that to kill him would become natural. Today, I'm sure that the drill sergeants are demonizing the ragheads and the camel jockeys. That an officer of Palestinian descent was constantly harassed by others in the U.S. Army and called a camel jockey does not really surprise me. Mexican Americans in the U.S. Army suffer similar abuse, even though the war with Mexico ended in 1849. There is incredible racism in all branches of the U.S. Armed Forces. The racism is reflected in the attitudes of non-officers and officers alike. At Fort Hood, I once had the company commander, a captain, approach me to tell me not to speak Mexican in his company. When I politely informed him that there was no such thing as a Mexican language and that it was called Spanish, I was ordered to extra duty for insubordination.
God.
Recently, he says, I had the opportunity, as a reporter for La Voz de Aztlan, to accompany the 200-member Viva Palestina U.S. delegation to Gaza. On the way to Gaza, some in the delegation went to Alexandria, Egypt, to pick up some of the aid convoy vehicles. There in Alexandria, I and other U.S. delegates attended a Muslim prayer at the large downtown mosque. All Americans and Christians, as I am, should at least once in their lifetimes visit a mosque and pray alongside Muslims. I believe that the greatest problem that Americans suffer is from is ignorance. I will never forget the U.S. Army 2nd Armored Division captain at Fort Hood, Texas, that thought I spoke Mexican instead of the Spanish language.
Right, and it just we had this. We just had 8 years of the president where he's, you know, these backdoor drafts and these repeated deployments. They're up to perhaps 7, 8, or 9 for some individual soldiers at these hellish places in Afghanistan and Iraq. And you know, now that the guys gave up Abdullah and the election there because they just know that they're going to steal it again. And the Hamid Karzai's people, Mike Malloy was saying last night that maybe some people from Halliburton or the Blackwater, whatever its new name is, they had him out for dinner or something and told Mr. Abdullah that they don't want to go through the process of having to steal another election again, and that, you know, they don't want to have to JFK him or make him into another, Premier Diem in 1963, just a couple of months before they killed Kennedy in South Vietnam, the premier that was killed, or like the guy that was killed in Panama and the supposed plane crash, and then with Noriega, of course. He's still some kind of political prisoner. He's in limbo, but they get away with this. And this inbred brat, this Vietnam War draft dodger, he gets away with deserting from the Army, the Texas Air National Guard, where any average guy there could end up in Leavenworth, or he could end up in a lot of discipline and just have a total dishonorable discharge for what he did and the way he left for so long. They let him go, George W. Bush, go to Harvard, not really going to Harvard. He's going to Harvard Business School. That's not real scholarship. That's not real work with your mind. And that's got nothing to do with it. It's got nothing to do with learning how to steal legally. But he probably already knew that from the family he comes from. But this guy, he kept calling it for years the Central War on Terror in Iraq against the former secular enemy, Saddam Hussein, who hated bin Laden worse than our own people did. And we kept the Islamic extremists and any terrorist in line there. Saddam Hussein was the last, he was a bastard, but he was the last one that had any kind of orderly rule there, even with the top half and the bottom half of his country being divided off and sectioned off there and all the sanctions. But at the same time, President Bush says it's a Central War on Terror is in Iraq. Why didn't he call up the draft? Instead of, you know, God love our young people there too, but that's to wake up the American people, the American sheeple, instead of having these repeated deployments and or at the same time.
Well, but you just answered your own question.
Yeah.
The reason there was no draft is the last thing in the world you want to do is to wake up the American people. Because we are in a quiet, yeah, you know, there's that possibly apocryphal statement after Pearl Harbor where
we waken the sleeping giant
and filled him with a terrible resolve.
Yeah.
Well, that's
Yamamoto. He took
that's the last thing
Harvard Extension, like that's where I was.
Right. But that's the last thing that the American kleptocracy wants to do is wake up the American people, because if we get filled with a terrible resolve this time, the terrible resolve will be aimed at the people we know who are making the trouble. Unfortunately, George W. Bush is already out of office and, for all intents and purposes, is beyond the reach of the law.
Well, certainly this law, this attorney general, but with what keeps coming out about the latest Cheney interviews there with Fitzgerald about the plane outing, there's still so much out there that they could bring people, even people a couple of notches ranked under George W. Bush to show it, you know, that they can't get away with it. If they get away with this kind of carte blanche, it shows, and Mike Malloy brought that up last night too. I just heard the repeat show of that now they're sanctioning torture openly. During the Vietnam War, it was always under the table. It was not really official American policy, or our State Department, our U.S. Embassy would always speak out against any killing of civilians or kidnapping of civilians or any, you know, the Viet Cong suspects, whatever. They would But now it's sanctioned what they did, that Canadian-Syrian dual citizen there, Canada's, their premier, that conservative premier, Mr. Harper, apologized personally to Mr. Hurrah for what for their stealing his life away from him, basically, and forcing him to go to a Syrian dungeon to be tortured for at least 10 months. And the American government doesn't want to, they don't want to have to answer to this because it takes away the president's imperial right to fight terrorism anywhere and everywhere, I guess. But you also have the Italian court is sentenced in absentia, the 23 CIA agents. They're fugitives now, these people. And Mike Malloy, another great point Uncle Mike makes, that what country does not have extradition treaties with and relations with the nation state of Italy? There's probably no country on earth, basically. And if these people will be fugitives in just about any country they go to, liable to be arrested and be sent off to Italy and for what they did to kidnapping the people there and sending them off to torture places in Egypt, in Syria. And we have this guy that boils people alive in Uzbekistan that's supposed to be a great ally against the terrorists. He terrorizes his own people on that scale. And yet we're supposed to look to him as an ally? This is ridiculous, Bob. We can't keep humoring the national media is a joke. That they're not a fourth estate. They're nothing like that. If people still want to they have to have for the comic relief, I don't blame them. I like I said, I don't have cable TV, but if they need to see Jon Stewart or see something, there's other, in the NFL football, it's just, that's the one sport I could say I can't understand this ultimate fighting, these other types of, where it's just basically legalized thuggery and street fighting, which would be criminal actions in the real world. But in football, it's basically tightly controlled, that kind of thing. But here and there, there's some programming people might want. But the national television news is the opposite of what the truth is. It's the corporate American Empire view of what the truth is.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we have to get beyond that. And I was just hearing that the playing this Irish pub music there. It says somewhere on Winamp.com, and it just fired up my sense of that we need to come back like the Irish rebels there and their boycott against Charles Cunningham, boycott the cruel English overlord there and landlord in Ireland. Back in the 19th century, we need to get back to that. And these, Ravi Bhakra says in a book about Alan Greenspan, Greenspan's lies there. Here's the guy, the free market guy, Alan Greenspan. He gets away with initiating the biggest tax increase in American history by far, the Social Security tax, the payroll tax. Under Ronald Reagan, this guy gets away with during his entire reign, they're saying, I never raised taxes. And American people, they get away with this kind of nonsense, and Greenspan to this day still is respected. He's allowed to speak as some kind of eminent person. He knows damn well that Wall Street hasn't been watched for at least 8 years. There's no Securities and Exchange Commission. They haven't kept these people in line, and you can't just allow the marketplace and human social Darwinism to run such things as Wall Street. That there are certain rules that where they're trading these derivatives and risk on people's failing in their mortgages or banks failing. They're trading. It's like the horse racing gone to Wall. That whole gambling.
Yes.
It's got nothing to do with substance. When you buy a house here in New Hampshire or where you are in West Virginia, whatever, where it's not going to be near a blown up mountaintop or, with toxic waste coming down and endangering children's drinking water, that kind of thing. But in a normal situation, the guys, the skilled people there, like my two brothers-in-law are builders. One's a bricklayer, one's a master carpenter. They build an actual product, a house. And that's the product, and the people that are trying to blame the poorest people of the poor, that's what Acorn tried to represent, and just try to give them some basic rights to not to be zoned out of the American dream of owning their own home. These people, they work, they try to work, and now they don't have an economy to work within. They try to live within their budget to make their monthly housing, the mortgage payments, so they can eventually actually own the place. They know they still got to pay the taxes on that property, taxes, whatever. but they want to have a sense of ownership, that some little part of the American dream. That's not profiteering. The people that turn the houses over and over again in the wacky real estate market we have here from about 2002 to 2007, at least here in New Hampshire, 2006, I guess it really started to peter out there slowly but surely. These people, they turn it over like, you know, it's like, you get the wrong drink at a McDonald's. If it was for somebody else, some other customer, so you hand them your hot chocolate and you take back the coffee that you ordered. They switch houses like, you know, they think it's not supposed to be that easy to be selling or owning or paying off the mortgage on such things, such property as houses. That's the one thing I gotta admit, I can't stand Ron Paul in a lot of ways, and Ayn Rand, her books on philosophy are nothing but, they're just nothing but
they're just
sickening, childish exposition on the goodness of greed. This is a woman in a 1982 funeral. Ayn Rand, by her specific order, she had a huge floral bouquet made at her funeral in the shape of a dollar sign.
This is
what all her philosophy stands for. Everything is just the survival of the fittest, and it's of the cruelest and the coldest. It's a philosophy that naturally at George W. Bush or Dick Cheney, they flocked to. Today, Ronald Reagan was heavily influenced by Milton Friedman, who was a heavy Randian follower. And these people, they've destroyed our country in the last 28 years or more. The goodness of it. And you were talking before about the Muslim soldier that he cracked up. I can't excuse what happened or what he did, but at the same time, I can see why it was almost a logical reaction on his part. And with these people being over deployed, you know, without a draft, for these two large escalating conflict in Afghanistan, and there's still going to be a huge deployments there for many years in Iraq, apparently. And they still don't call up the draft. These Blackwater thugs are still, they're profiteering and making billions and more from taxpayers. But there used to be a time, I remember, I read a book by, there was a journalist, Vincent Sheehan, going back to the 1950s and before that. He talked about the Korean War. You know, there was a Turkish army, people in the Turkish brigade and the Greek brigade that served alongside American forces in Korea. And the Americans, when they used to go to the showers together, the Turkish guys, they kept their underwear on because, you know, Muslim modesty, that's their sense of, you know, they just don't do that. They don't go to a shower naked, and they just don't do that with other men, with anybody. The American GIs used to kid them mercilessly about it, but they just kid them, you know, that like people that are, they can laugh, but they can get a gallows humor when you're in a war situation like that, that, you know, you could die at any moment. But it was very much in the American spirit, but, and also the Greek soldiers, in spite of that ancient history of the Greek and Turkish, you know, they've had a hard and tragic history of wars against each other, and religion too, Muslim against Christian. But the Greeks would say, no, that's the way Turks are. They're Muslim people. You got to respect that. And they would intervene. And now I see that there's some Greeks and Turks have served as peacekeepers for NATO forces alongside each other in Macedonia and in Kosovo in recent years. So, you know, things aren't all, you know, ancient hatreds don't always go on forever. They can peter out, but America.
But they have to be broken.
Yeah.
Brian, they have to be broken.
But we have to get back to that America that we're not torturing and sexually assaulting the kids of these suspected, Islamic or Al-Qaeda, whatever, people at Guantanamo and Bagram Air Force Base in Afghanistan, where we torture their children in front of them. We have to get back to more of the good-natured ribbing, you know, the Americans. We were more innocent then in the Korean War and in World War II, but it was more, we were well-intentioned, at least our average soldiers were. They were government-issue, GI. They were not contractors. They were not trying to profiteer off of war, off of human misery. It was a sacred thing to them, or at least that was the goal, at least, to try to protect some kind of democracy and civilization at the end of World War II, and try to protect something like a democracy, hopefully eventually, in South Korea. And it did turn into a very vital democracy, a very a productive. The great society they have there now in South Korea, and many of them say they don't need our forces, and that they really don't. They have such a powerful South Korean army on their own. That Kim Il-sung wouldn't dare, I don't think he would dare try anything against it. They say in South Vietnam, the toughest troops that they had to face there were the South Korean, the ROK troops, the Republic of Korea troops, Bob. And that you know, these people that all over the world can defend themselves against terrorists and any enemy. They don't need Americans in every country to handle that kind of thing there.
It's not just that we can't be the world's policemen, it's that we ought not be the world's policemen, and that on the occasions when we have attempted to be the world's policemen, we have proven ourselves not to be very good at it.
That's right. We're just not maybe we're not mature enough as a culture.
You just can't go into somebody's someplace that you don't have any cultural comprehension of and try to tell people what to do. It doesn't work that way. I mean, my God, you're going to fight a war in a land where Arabic is the primary spoken language, and so the first thing you do is you go through and you check to make sure whether any of your Arab linguist experts in the military are gay, and you fire them because you got too many Arabic speakers jumping Jiminy.
I know.
Hey, Brian, I got to run along, brother, but it's been a great conversation.
Have a good weekend, sir.
All right, I got a little tune for you on the way out.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, take care now. Bye now. A good Irishman, Brian is. And so with that in mind, a little something for him before we go to the next phone call, if you don't mind. I heard the Van Morrison in the background.
Stay a while with your
powerful stuff. That's from a disc that Van Morrison did with the Chieftains called Irish Heartbeat. That's the title track. But you know what? Your own ones doesn't necessarily have to apply to an ethnicity or any particular group. It's the beautiful thing about what we've got going on here at the Horn. It's a whole spread literally the world over. I've got emails from our buddy Phase 5 in Australia. I get emails from the around the world, and we are our own ones, regardless of borders. It's the beauty of the internet. It can shatter borders into a million tiny pieces that can never be put back together again. And I think it's one of the stunning successes of the Horn as well, I might add. To the phones. Hey, welcome to the program. What have I done now? Hey, David.
Oh, boy. You know, the biggest travesty to me where it concerns Van Morrison is, you know, nobody ever picks to play on the radio, ever. I don't think I've ever heard it for a bumper, but they should. Is off the No Guru, No Teacher, No Method album, In the Garden.
You very seldom hear anything from Astral Weeks either.
Yeah, well, they did bring it. I haven't heard it though. They did bring it back for the I don't know if you heard about this. The Astral Weeks live at the Hollywood Bowl.
No.
Well, apparently Van Morrison. I'll send it to you later. But apparently Van Morrison recreated on stage Astral Weeks at the Hollywood Bowl last year. So.
Oh wow.
Yeah, a lot of people were talking about it. I didn't get to hear that much of it, but you were talking about before I get into what I called about you were having musicians on, and I mean you were profiling the Dave Alvin, but you know I don't know if I asked this, but did you ever get around to listening to the Lost album by Lewis Taylor?
No.
Bah.
I know, I'm a bad person.
I should have put an emphasis on it. And in case David from Tennessee is listening, let me put it to you this way. Lewis Taylor, I'll mention this again, is probably one of my top favorite artists of all time. There is no artist like him currently now on the scene. He had such an impact on people. I couldn't make this story up. He had such an impact on people that literally, musicians like Elton John, Daryl Hall, David Bowie, D'Angelo were basically crawling at his feet asking where he came from, how he came up with this music, what was his background. let me just put it to you this way. He started out as a musician in England, and he was really into the prog and art rock scene. But somewhere around like 1994, 1993, all the psychedelics that he had taken, the drugs in his head, had formed this magical chemistry. And he really, really got involved into this weird psychedelia of Marvin Gaye-type harmonies mixed in with Hendrixian guitars. I mean, if David from Tennessee is listening, I will put it to you this way. There is no musician on the planet who will just not walk away mad that they didn't come up with it. That's how awesome he is. I mean, there's one. I'll give you an example. He has a great cover of the Beach Boys, Brian Wilson on the Lost album. So, you know, Bob, it's amazing stuff. I can't recommend it enough. He mixes a lot of different. He's the type of musician. This is the kind of rarity I'm talking about, people. He's the type of musician where you can take one track, whether it's a vocal harmony, and yes, he's an angel when it comes to just vocals. But you can take one track, whether it's guitar, keyboards, or the bass that he's playing. You can take one track and you can go, how the hell did he come up with that? And he records it all at his house. I don't know what happened. Somewhere in 2006, he had a fallout with the industry, unplugged everything. All the websites were gone. Everything was gone. But he did do a short U.S. tour. And this guy's amazing. He covers... Now I know I'm really interesting, David from Tennessee. He covers things that no one would cover. Like, for example, he covers Jimi Hendrix's Electric Ladyland, and then all of a sudden, he covered Captain Beefheart's Trout Mask replica in his basement. He's an amazing dude, Bob. I mean, he can do note for note Brian Wilson harmonies. Don't ask me how he does it. And his previous occupation was a butcher. So here's the thing about him. Elton John literally went on TV and just kept mentioning Lewis Taylor over and over again. Lewis Taylor, he's so amazing. When you listen to, like, the first solo album, if I send you the first solo album, Bob, you'll just be like,
oh my God,
I can't believe I don't have it.
Yeah, just send me a couple of tracks and let me listen, and I will make it happen this weekend.
All right, good. Okay. The other thing I wanted to mention was regarding the shooting. I hope people understand the significance of it. And I believe we talked about this before, Bob. We said, I said, and pretty much a lot of other people have been saying, that if the Muslim specter is brought up again, Obama is basically going to be a one-termer. And it looks like the specter has been brought out with this shooting, and it looks like it's creating exactly what the right wing wanted, which will rev up the base like you wouldn't believe.
Well, you already know what kind of sleaze Jerome Corsi engaged in.
Oh, yeah, I know.
How long before one of those nameless right-wing miserable piles of excrescence, how long before they start referring to the president as Barack Hassan Obama? Any bets? Day? 2 days? Has it already happened?
They'll be worse than that. They'll call him Barack Allah Akbar Obama.
Yeah, there was that made-up thing, too, wasn't it? Yeah, the right-wingers already had the shooter in Texas screaming Allahu Akbar.
Yeah.
Dirty bastards, you know?
So I'm pretty much convinced that Obama is going to be a one-termer, because we're going to have more shootings.
Yeah, but it depends on who they put up against him, David.
I understand what you're saying, but I...
Because you know what? He would... let's see. Let me come up with a couple. He would mop the floor with Sarah Palin.
Yeah.
He would absolutely devastate... I'll pick another one. Bobby Jindal. I can't. That's the beautiful thing. There is a real paucity of talent on the right wing side, because the only people these teabaggers are appealing to is other teabaggers.
It really depends how many people.
And frankly, the polling numbers are still pretty doggone good.
It depends how many people are going to drop off on the Obama trend. He really has to bring something to the table these 4 years. And it looks like.
And we're not even a year in. I mean, I got to be fair. We're not a year in.
Well, it will be there soon enough, Bob. That's the point. And the fact is everything's getting hammered away from us, literally. And Obama has to make a stand somewhere. He can't just, you know, the problem is he's doing everything that everything the corporations pretty much want. And we can't, this country can't deal with 4 years of that. Unless that's really what they wanted to create.
Yeah, but come on, David, don't kid yourself. The other side, you know, some Republican gets into the White House, they're not going to do what the corporations want. This is a corporatocracy.
I know. That's the catch-22 right there, because it's exactly what you're saying.
So it becomes not so much anything as it is a matter of branding.
Yeah, a matter of
branding. It's marketing. It's not even politics anymore. It's just marketing.
it's marketing, and, you know, you start to think, who's going to really start caring about the jobs in this country when we start having a serious drop-off like we are now, and even worse? I mean, who's going to step up and say, we need to really be concerned about jobs, because if it's all just going to be a bunch of hot air, that's going to be, you know what I think it is? The Democrats are headed for a slaughterhouse in 2010. They really are, because we do have people that are that stupid, Bob, in this country, and they will vote for what they think is.
But right now, stupid is, I mean, I don't know, maybe we delineate degrees of stupid, but the really, really breathe in, breathe out, breathe in, breathe out stupids,
yeah,
are at, you know, 17-18%. And don't think for a minute that the weirdos on the House floor like Phil Gingrey and Paul Brown from Georgia and that weirdo from Louisiana, don't think for a minute that they want a President Palin. What they want is their own power. They are in it for what happens in November 2010. And critical to that is making sure that frankly, well, I mean, you know, Jim DeMint said, we want health care to be Obama's Waterloo. And you know, one of the things that disturbed me today, there was supposed to be a vote today on Representative Weiner's single-payer amendment in the House.
Mm-hmm.
But he withdrew it.
Mm.
And he withdrew it at the urging of Dennis Kucinich and John Conyers. And I give Dennis Kucinich a whole lot of leeway. And Dennis Kucinich basically said, with things the way they are, this is not the time. This is not during this fight the way it is right now. This is not the time to do it. And frankly, Dennis has been more right, you know, like up in the 90% range, 95% plus. So I'm inclined to trust him. Now, if suddenly he winds up being House Majority Whip or something like that, I'll know a deal was made. But I don't think that's likely to happen.
No, I don't think that's likely to happen either. I think, but as you said, Bob, we're about to go into, it's hard to believe, but we're about to go into election season. Well, we pretty much, you know what the truth is? The truth is, Bob, we're always in election season.
Yes, yes, yes.
Especially with the age of the internet and everything in real time and just coming at you continuously. And the fact of when they sort out the video screens and stuff like that, the video drones.
Oh, I don't want anybody reaching into my belly for a 45 semi-automatic.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. That's the problem. I mean, when does it come back to the people? And I don't think anyone has an answer. I was listening to Tom Hartman today, and he was talking about how he was having call after call about the really Islamic phobic type of callers. Really, really erratic.
Tom was? The weirdos?
Yeah, I mean,
wing nuts? Or yeah, our side? Is our side getting that way too?
No. Our side is pretty rational. But what I'm saying is the fact that I don't think Tom and a lot of people on the left understand that you really can't, rationality really can't conquer fear when you have a 24/7 news cycle like that and it's ramped up constantly. And I was thinking about that today. I was like, how can you even begin to defeat that? How can you even begin to just balance that out? And you can't, because if you say to someone, you talk to someone in a rational way, if someone is pretty much at the end of their rope or the myth of America is dissipating in their head, the first thing that they're going to reach for is anger. And then the second thing is going to be hatred. And it's going to go very, very fast in their mind, accelerate. And then it will be vented out. And that's the problem, because once they hit the anger stage, it doesn't matter if they're violent, see? Because once they hit the anger stage, it doesn't matter what you tell them. They can be really intelligent, but they need to hold on to something, some kind of grasp of some form of reality. And the closest
and hate and fear are easy to manipulate.
Right, and it's the closest thing to get is angry at someone. And you know, so many people want to be told the history of revisionism and the mythical nature of America and its soldiers. And you know, I was reading some of these messages online, and I was reading some of these Twitter messages from the Fort Hood. And you know, it really is ingrained in our psyche that we really are. I don't know. In a way, we try to make ourselves not be judged, and we get really offensive when we are judged, which is really a dangerous place to be. And I noticed that where I live. And I noticed that whenever I turn on the radio and listen to people call in to different shows, they have that tone. And I don't think there's a remedy for that, Bob, and I don't think there's a cure for that. And I think people just want to hold on to something that they were told to, because everything else is just going to shit for them. And that's really where I think we're at. So, you know, a lot of these people who are conservatives who have just been ingrained in that.
That's why you have to drag them kicking and screaming into the 21st century. Okay, let's drag them kicking and screaming into the 19th century. I'm easy to get along with.
I understand what you're saying, but I think this is a whole different animal, especially when you have a news cycle like this constantly just ramping up and just playing on people's emotions, just basically taunting at them. Ha ha, there's nothing you can do. Look at all these Muslims around you. Ha ha, look at, and if everything in your life is going to crap,
There's nothing new in that.
I know there's nothing new, but see, Bob, we have a new generation of people, and another generation who...
I mean, this to be fair, this is, was, and always has been a bigoted nation. And sometimes it has been a profoundly racist nation. And I do draw the distinction between the two. I don't know if you saw the story. It was, you know, one of those really meaningless stories about Bob Greasy being suspended by ABC Disney.
No, I didn't.
You know, he does commentary for football games and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason or another, they were talking about racing, and the absence of a race driver named Juan Pablo Montoya,
mm-hmm.
who is from Colombia, came up, and Bob Greasy just popped off and said, "Well, he's not here because he was out getting a taco."
Oh yeah. I remember you talking about that. Yeah.
And the important thing is, that is not a manifestation of racism.
Mm.
That is a manifestation of bigotry. And the two are distinct items. I know some people may think I'm making a distinction without a difference, but they really are two different things.
Mm-hmm.
There's racism, which is the deeply held belief that one ethnicity is better than another ethnicity or than all ethnicities as a group, as a whole. I mean, to wit, the Klan, okay? But then there's just dumbass bigotry. And that's what Bob Greasy was doing. Just stupid bigotry. And so, you know, I bring that up because I think what we're dealing with is dumbass bigotry in this country. You know, coupled with fear. Because you know what? And you know, this is one of those ironic moments.
Yeah.
I remember when Jerry Falwell's filthy ass went into the hospital with pneumonia or some such. One of his doctors, as it turned out, had a distinctly Islamic name. You know, Abdullah or Ibrahim or something along those lines.
And I thought, you know, wait a minute. What the hell is Jerry Falwell doing in a hospital in the first place? You know, he should be glad to be going home to Jesus. But assuming that he doesn't want to go home to Jesus just yet, because he figures maybe he's got the, at least a 50-50 shot, given all he's done in his life of going to the other place, then why is an old bigot like Falwell letting a Muslim doctor work on him? And the answer is because the Muslim doctor is smart and competent. And, you know, the bigotries can go away when one's own self-interest is on the line. Just as is the case, I would dearly love to find out that, Dr. Ismail Zalik was the guy who performed Glenn Beck's surgery. That's not even a real doctor. Or maybe. But, you know, so that Glenn Beck has to look up out of the bed and thank one of those people that he's been hating on. You remember what he said to Keith Ellison? You know. You know, I'm not trying to say anything, but can you assure us that you're not a terrorist? Remember?
Yeah, I remember.
But
see, the thing is, Bob, is I think this is a problem from a lot of. A problem with a lot of the left that we have now is the fact that there's only so much time that we can provide a rational dialogue to someone before someone has basically been tapped out. But
there are some people you don't want that rational dialogue with, he said, ending the sentence in a preposition. There are some people with whom you cannot have a rational dialogue. You cannot have a rational dialogue with somebody who thinks that the earth is the way it is and that the human condition is what it is because the first woman on the planet had a conversation with a gossipy water moccasin. Can't do it. You just can't do it. You can't have that rational conversation with somebody who believes that the earth is, you know, 6,000 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Can't do it. Can't be done. Doesn't happen. And the same thing applies. To back reference the Mark Morford column from that we went into yesterday, the same thing applies to political types. You know, if you look at them and say, you know, there's something wrong with our capitalist system, they immediately say, commie! And no more dialogue.
Yeah.
At some point in time, if we are going to have a better nation, we have to come to the conclusion that 80% of us are going to have to do it, and we're going to have to do it without 20% of us who will have to be dragged kicking and screaming into the 19th century, period. But it can be done. But it requires some leadership, and it requires a whole boatload of guts.
It's going to be very challenging in an impoverished nation to try to have a rational dialogue because so many people reach for the easy excuse, and they need, and that's what I was basically getting at. They need something to hold on to grasp because they don't have anything else, and that's pretty much what I'm seeing around me right now, where I live. The rationality, Bob, is
at a premium.
Yeah, it's
short supply.
Yeah, a lot of people are turning completely the wrong way. And venting their frustration and their emotions completely in the wrong direction. And I don't know. There's something in 2010 that's either going to totally veer us on the right course, or we're going to veer on the wrong course.
Well, if the Republicans succeed in retaking the House. The answer is easy, David.
Yeah.
And the answer is we're screwed. I don't mean liberal people are screwed. I mean working people are screwed. Church-going people are screwed. Gun-owning people are screwed. Stock-owning people are screwed. American people are screwed. The world is screwed. I mean, it does matter. There's reality involved with this. just is.
Serious question, though. Do you think the Democrats in power right now, do you think most of them care about the quote-unquote working class getting back to work?
Yes.
Well, I guess that's where we differ, Bob, because I don't. And I'm being
because they have to. They have to by default. Because if they don't, then there's a distinct possibility that their lovely life takes a powder. You got to have taxpayers in order to continue to support the lavish lifestyle of an elected member of the Congress of the United States. Because even if you're getting tons of money from corporate America still has to get its money somewhere.
So what do you think they're going to do about the job situation?
I think as it stands, there's still too much bank in it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think as it gets worse, and it is getting worse, and there's no sign of it getting better.
Yeah.
If Barack Obama has it in him, I think you're going to finally see a shift towards some honest-to-God, more FDR-esque stuff, because it worked before.
Now, I've read something that I'm not sure is exactly true, and maybe you can tell me if it's true or not. With the money that was given to quote-unquote small businesses, it seems like they're not really giving the money to quote-unquote small businesses, but multi-billion-dollar corporations labeled as small businesses. My point, I guess my real question is, doesn't that strike more to the theory that they don't really want to take care of America in their respect if we're drowning and they just really want to help out the multi-billion-dollar businesses and they can get around and huckster and be hucksters and lazy?
Yeah, but the multi-billion-dollar businesses can't even succeed indefinitely without some without something fairly serious transpiring for the American working class. Or at least that's the way it seems to me.
Hmm. Well, the question is, and before I go, I just wanted to say, I guess the question is what can the Democrats do if they don't really control? And see, here's the other problem, Bob. They don't really control the argument
because they're choosing not to.
Yes, yes, and no. I mean, they don't really control the argument because of how the media is shaped now. Media is shaped in so much in favoritism toward the spirit of personal responsibility and pull yourself by your own bootstraps, and you really can't have a set a rational dialogue like
you
that.
Yeah, but you can't pull yourself up by your own bootstraps when you ain't got no boots.
I know, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying you can't have a rational dialogue with that premise. It's a myth that's been inoculated into someone's mind, and when you have all of the anchors, basically, Bob, you have all...
Well, what you're pointing... You and I are pointing to the same thing, David.
Right.
And that is that the American people, no matter how bad it appears to have gotten thus far, the American people haven't felt it yet. For the most part, we haven't felt it yet. You know, the stores still have, the stores aren't shuttered, they're still open, they're still the money's still good, and people still have it in their pockets. But the fact of the matter is, the numbers are looking like that cannot continue. You know, this year, as we noted a couple of nights ago, this year we are going to surpass, this year bankruptcies will equal divorces in this country. That's never happened before. We know now that by 2019 there will be 56 million uninsured Americans if the Republicans get their way. And for the people who do have insurance, the premium by then will be something on the order of $100,000 a year.
Bob, I can honestly see the Republicans...
Or $100,000 in 3 years.
I can honestly see the Republicans get back in power because of how gullible the American people are.
Well, that's really that. Look, that's the constant fear. I'm not disputing you.
Well,
but that's what we have to work against as well.
Right. I just wanted to tell you before I go. I can't believe it was so easy to find that Alexander Kincaid book.
And I figured it out. That's not my multi-great-grandfather. That is my multi-great-uncle.
Ah, okay.
He is the brother, because he was born 1710. He's the brother of the brothers that came over here.
Right. Did you see the genealogy chart on free genealogy?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, I thought that book was interesting anyway.
Well, it's an interesting piece of writing, and his premise is fascinating, you know, that there is a predilection for erasing a people's history by way of erasing a people.
I guess you could say it came at the right time.
That was a perfect call. David, have yourself a great weekend.
All right, later.
All right, take care. Bye now. Pop culture correspondent David calling from Maine. And onward we go. Hey, welcome to the... Oh, rats, a busy signal. Well, we're about 9 minutes out from being at the end of the week. Remember, Conversation Radio hopefully returns each Sunday evening at 9 p.m. Eastern Time with All Foxed Up with John Fox. And I have some bad news going into the weekend. For way over a year now, some 79 shows, horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner has railed and pleaded and cajoled and begged people to take their own well-being into their own hands in the form of participation in government and making demands. Demands for real reform, real liberal reform. And I got a note from Rick simply saying, that's it. I'm throwing in the towel. I'm licked. And that saddens me beyond my ability to state it. Because Rick has been right. Rick has been on point. And frankly, he might have had a greater sense of success if the reach of the horn had been broader. We are still trying for that day. And I hope that day comes. And so, no Rick's Place this weekend. No Rick's Place next weekend or any week or the weekend after that. Rick has saddled up and headed back to the ranch. And he will be missed. I assume he is still willing to be on staff as horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner for the occasional crisis call when we just don't understand why wingnuts are behaving like wingnuts behave. So thanks for a hell of a lot of fine, good Jim Dandy work, Rick Goodner. Thanks. You will be missed. The program note for next week, no show Monday, no show Tuesday, no show Wednesday. I'm on the road. I have a meeting I have to attend. So those days will be reruns. My apologies, but it's a gotta. You know how it is with gottas. Thank you to you all for listening, sharing your time, and making this such a rich and rewarding experience on my end. I hope it is as much so for you as it is for me. And I will miss not being here Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. But I'll be back Thursday. And I'll probably be busting at the seams by the time I am. You know how it is with me. Thank you for your continued financial support of what we are trying to accomplish here. We couldn't do it without you. Thanks to John Fox, to Ben Birch. Thanks to Peter Godbold. I heard from him. He's feeling much better. Thank you very much. Sends his regards. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net and coalriverwind.org. They never stand down and they never back down against one of the most pernicious, wicked corporate interests on the planet. And always, always, always. Gina, it's all for you. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Arcade. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! You'll have to pardon me if I'm a little distracted this evening. I've got my Friends of Coal coloring book out, and I am having a devil of a good old time. Yeah, there's lots of coloring to be done in the Friends of Coal coloring book. Mostly, you really don't need more than a couple of different crayons there. A lot of black crayons, for coal. Not unless you want to be coloring the lignite, which is brown. Brown and black crayons. The sole use of brown and black crayons, and I may be mistaken, but I don't think I am. The horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner could probably tell me otherwise. But the single use of brown and black crayons is kind of one of those little red flags that goes up in psych cases of, whoop, we got a live one here. But really, you don't need much more than brown and black crayon to do the Friends of Coal coloring book. You can get yours if you want. It's over at, just look over a few stories down at thinkprogress.org. Oh, it's fun. It's got all kinds of coded word scrambles and explanations of where coal comes from and how good it is and how we all ought to worship it and have it on our make frisbees out of it and eat it on wheat checks. And, it's just good, that coal. With the little Fokker symbol down at the bottom of every page. Yeah, charming. What's disturbing about the Friends of Coal coloring book? It's part of an entire overall educational program to which little fourth grade children in West Virginia are actually subjected. It is sickening. It is truly some sickening propaganda. I mean, you remember the hissy spit that the right wing threw over the Obama education speech, a month or so ago? Because he was going to turn all our little children into, the little Maoists or socialists or the Nazi communists or whatever. Yeah. That kind of propaganda rains down on little elementary school children in West Virginia every year. Long about fourth grade. Coal is good. Coal is your savior. Worship the coal. Here's a coloring book. And a brown crayon, and a black crayon. Enjoy. But there's all kinds of subliminal stuff in this. One of the things that I found most interesting is that they represent a coal miner. You remember McGruff the crime dog? McGruff here! Right? Well, they've apparently bogarted McGruff. But now, there's a little girl in the coloring book who looks surprisingly like Cindy Lou Who from How the Grinch Stole Christmas. And there's a little moon-eyed boy. And then there's a dog. And the dog, here's the fun part, the dog wears massy stripes, and he's the representation of a coal miner. The Friends of Coal represent a coal miner as being a dog. Yeah, no kidding. So... you can see how I would get all excited using my brown and black crayon to work on my Friends of Coal coloring book. I haven't had this much fun coloring since, I don't know if I ever have. But I got to pull myself away from it because every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday are all my favorite nights of the week because those are the nights of the week that I get to be with you. But I just love Fridays because it's Friday on the front porch and we loosen up the straps a little bit and kick our feet back and sort of put them up on the porch and noodle around on the banjo or have an ice cold something or another out of the zinc wash tub over there with the little silver caps just barely sticking up out of the ice. Oh, it's cold and good. Pass around the pitcher with the ice cold sweet tea in it. Just kick back and enjoy ourselves after a busy week of keeping up with the pernicious activities of the sick, sorry, sad, miscreant, misbegotten, misanthropic right wing. And on Fridays, we have a little fun. So if you can put down your Friends of Coal coloring book, I'll put mine down. And we will. We'll have a little fun. I want to start this evening with the audio to something. I was alerted to this earlier in the day. Have you seen John Stewart's take on Glenn Beck? Granted, we're doing radio here, so we're minus one element. And there are some visuals. But the audio alone, I tested this, by the way. I turned the computer, before I ever watched it, I turned the computer away and listened to it to see if it was still funny to sort of pre-screen it for you guys. And you know what? It is. It most assuredly is funny. I have never seen anyone so effectively or heard anyone so effectively take down Glenn Beck. Because, you know, Glenn's got a communist in his tummy right now, or maybe it's been removed in the form of appendicitis. Won't disclose the hospital he's in. Shh. It's a secret. But John Stewart took him down last night. I don't know what the standards are for awarding an Emmy. But if this isn't Emmy-worthy material for the writers, for John Stewart himself in the performance, they might as well just quit giving away the award. Because this is pure brilliance.
But I don't know if you saw Glenn Beck's show last night. It started with a bit of a shock.
Glenn is out tonight with appendicitis.
No. Calm down. I know you're concerned, but don't worry. He's fine. But there's a larger, more serious point to be made here. You may remember that 18 months ago, Glenn Beck was hospitalized after botched hemorrhoid surgery. So this appendix thing is not an isolated incident. Don't you see? Part of a bigger pattern. And the powers that be don't want us to talk about this. And you certainly won't hear about it in the mainstream media. There's a war going on. And the stakes are nothing less than Glenn Beck's internal organs. You see, I've been reading a lot of books lately, books on anatomy that aren't now taught in your so-called medical schools anymore. Apparently the medicine that was good enough for our founding fathers is now considered politically or medically incorrect. Rousseau's Discourse on the Science and the Arts, Linnaeus, Hippocrates, Galen's on Prognosis, and I've been playing this game.